and it's 6 past the hour on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, people who work at bookstores, all of you. Good morning. Good morning, Mark Riley.
Good morning, Mark Maron.
Oh, my God. Email is draining. My kittens are draining. Everything's draining me this morning, Riley.
You got a car, man. Somebody offered you, well, not offered, offered you information about how to procure a car. I saw that email, was an email? Yeah, it was an email. It just jumped out at me.
Yeah, I kind of, you know, vague. Not, I just sort of said, someone give me a car for my birthday. My birthday is next week. And some guy wrote that there's a service or something. I have to figure out what it is exactly. And then when Pashman, son of Lewis and Linda Pashman, New Jersey, Dan, that is, tried to explain it to me, he was sort of like, or was it Brendan? One of Brendan P.W. McDonald. I don't know who tried to explain it to me. They're just like, yeah, it's a service you pay, you know, month to month, and they just have cars laying around, just parked in different places, and you can just go and get the car.
Go pick up the car. Go
and
ahead.
Park in that same place.
Yeah.
So I don't know anything about it, but I'm going to look into it. I don't need one all the time. I wouldn't mind having one some of the time.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice. In New York, it can be a real pain in the neck if you don't have a place to keep it.
Well, people don't realize, like, you know, out there in the world of commuters, is that, you know, most people commute by train here. And that's the only way to go. I had a car here for a while that I'd use at night when I was doing club shows. Because at night, it's fun to drive around New York City. And
there's nobody here.
Yeah. Ripping up and down the FDR and flying around the streets. It's a great time. But during the day, it's a disaster. Even taking a cab. You know, if you ever think that, you know, just sort of like, I'm just going to take a cab up there. It's like, forget about it.
No, man. Get on a bus. Even get on a bus. Get on a train. The train's
the trains are amazing, man. The trains are amazing. There's nothing like them.
That's what attracted me to New York when I was a kid growing up. You know, I grew up in Connecticut, and just I used to come down to visit my brother, who you'll meet this weekend, as a matter of fact.
Ah, it's a big shindig.
Yeah, and it was incredible because the subway system here, first of all, is 24 hours a day. Like, London's closes at 1 o'clock in the morning.
But as the hours get later in the day, towards the late hours, maybe 24 hours a day, but it meant take an hour to get your train.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, they run like 3 an hour, hopefully, after a certain time of night. But they do go everywhere, literally everywhere in New York, and you can get around pretty easily. During the daytime when the streets are all clogged, there is no better way. But tell me about the cat.
No, it's kind of cool, though. It's kind of exciting when you get on one of them trains. It's like, zoom, and you're like all the way across. You like, can get down in Coney Island in like 15 minutes. You're like, how'd this happen?
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing when you just get that lucky run of trains and it's like, pow, pow, pow.
Oh, yeah, you just change and the train's right there waiting for you, and then it's an express. And you ever been out to Coney Island late at night?
Not late at night.
I have. I can confess to this now.
It's like pirates down there, isn't it? It's like some sort of ongoing party.
Yeah, it is. I had a friend who used to own one of those bumper car concessions out in Coney Island.
Yeah.
So we would go like at 2 o'clock in the morning. Don't ask why at 2 o'clock. But we'd go out at 2 o'clock in the morning, ride out to Coney Island on the train,
yeah,
and go bump, you know, use the bumper car till like daylight.
Okay, dude, you just admitted that you were really high at some point in your life. Where that's a good idea. It's like, what are you going to do, man? I know, it's 2 in the morning. Let's go do the bumper cars.
Yeah.
Only high people do that.
Well, you, look, I once biked from Manhattan all the way out to Far Rockaway at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I've done that.
Yeah, it's an incredible experience.
I've done the sort of 5-mile bike trek for no reason, just because you think it's a good idea to see if you can do it.
Yeah, and I had girl problems back then. I was like 19 years old. I had broken up with this girl. I was all depressed. So my friend said, come on, man, let's get on a bike and go biking.
And you're like, all right, maybe that'll work this out of me.
Yeah.
But I went down to Coney Island once with my wife, Mishna, and we went on that that cyclone.
Oh, the cyclone,
like,
yeah.
What is that, like 200 years old, that roller coaster? It's like there's, you look at roller coasters today and the ones that they have at the big parks, just like insane loop-de-loop things where you can almost hang out of the car. The cyclone is this little roller coaster, but it's more frightening than any roller coaster you're ever going to go on because it jerks you around.
Yeah.
Just because it's so damn old and it's rickety and you really don't know if you're going to die or not. And you know what I mean, Chris, when you're on it, Caleb, when it takes a turn, it's like, that's a very ungraceful turn on the roller coaster. You're like, hey, ow, that kind of hurt a little bit. They ought to polish this up or grease it. I don't know what.
It definitely jumps the track.
Exactly, it does, right? It comes off of the track.
Scary.
You got to go. When you come to New York, go down to Coney Island, go on the Cyclone, and then go have some Russian food down the street.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
like Russia out there. I have my my driver, he's a Russian. He was trying to tell me some places to go down.
Oh, like Brighton Beach?
Yeah, yeah, Odessa. And I said, aren't they all called Odessa? aren't all the restaurants Odessa? The cats, you wanted to hear about the cats? Well, what I did was I took the cage with the three cats into my office where the one cat was hanging out, and I opened the cage and let them all out. And now apparently they don't need me anymore. Like, you know, like I was making some progress with them needing me, but as soon as I opened the cage, the Stockholm Syndrome wore off, and they're now like, you know, we don't need you, we got us. And I swear to God, it was amazing because one of our listeners sent me a big box of cat toys.
Yeah.
And as soon as I let them out of the cage, it was like, it looked like a demo area for cat toys. Like, I should have been there like, hey, let me show you how these work. And every cat had a different toy, and they were flipping it in the air and juggling. One of them was talking, which was weird.
Uh-oh.
But literally saying, look what I can do. And I'm like, wait a minute, you're not cats. You're here's an interesting correction we had from an emailer yesterday. I was talking about George Bush, and we were talking about when he was governor and how he never didn't kill somebody.
Yeah.
He always killed whoever was supposed to be killed on death row. Carla Faye Tucker is the most famous case.
Yes.
A woman accused of murder in some sort of drugged out weird.
Well, convicted.
I'm sorry. And she was scheduled to die. She pleaded not to be let off the death penalty, and she had significantly changed her life. She had become
a born again
Christian,
Christian,
and actually engaged in some very decent works in the prison, helping people do things. And, I mean,
many of the other women on death row, in fact, credit her with
turning their life around,
helping them, such as they could. But I mean, really helping them find faith. She held Bible study classes, the whole thing.
And the Pope said, "Don't kill her." And
the Pope,
George
Pat
Bush,
Robertson, a whole bunch of people. Bush ignored all of them.
And this is a guy who some of his followers forgive him for whatever transgressions he might have made in his past because he is a born again Christian, but apparently not Christian enough to assess this situation properly. But apparently, I get a letter this morning. This morning, the two marks made a mistake. At the end of the show, they said that GW never spared any death row inmate. While he was governor, here we go. This is not true. Okay, W commuted the sentence of Henry Lee Lucas.
Yes.
The guy who inspired the film Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer. The guy who has been proven to have murdered 10 people and claimed to have murdered hundreds more. The guy who was convicted of everything from child molestation to supposedly raping and murdering his own mother. And then raping the corpse, which is not true. So I don't want to slander this guy.
Yeah, right.
It was some other old lady that he raped and killed. Now, here's the deal with
him.
But
he did kill his mother.
He did kill his mother, but he didn't rape her. I mean, come on. You know, let's go easy on the guy here, like George Bush did. Let's see. Here's some points of
highlights.
Highlights of we went to the Henry Lee Lucas fan site and got his discography. 1936, born to a prostitute named Viola in Blacksburg, Virginia. 53, 1953, loses an eye in a fight with his brother. Wow, man, I beat my brother up. That's some. 1960, yeah, right. Stabs his 74-year-old mother to death. 1982, kills and dismembers his girlfriend Becky Powell. 1982, kills 82-year-old Kate Rich, then rapes her corpse. Later in his confession, he says, I had sex, intercourse with her. It's one of those things that I guess got to be part of my life, having sexual intercourse with the dead. He also said, quote, to me, a live woman ain't nothing. I enjoy dead sex more than I do live sex, end quote. 1998, Texas Governor George W. Bush commutes Lucas's sentence to life in prison due to what he called flimsy evidence in the case.
Wow.
So this is one of those weird situations, because I have always said that George W. Bush, being under the training of Karl Rove, went out of his way never to alienate the capital punishment gang, the right to life gang, and also the gun people, right?
Yeah.
But this is different because he commuted this guy's sentence for some reason.
Why?
What I believe, you want me to be logical about this?
Sure, let's be logical.
I believe that when the day he commuted Henry Lee Lucas's sentence was the day that Satan showed up in the Capitol building in Texas, in Austin, and said, I'll give you whatever you want. You just got to let Henry Lee go, because he works for me. He's been on my payroll for years, and I need him in one incarnation or another. We can't have him burning up. I'll take care of that. He works for me. You can be president. Just let Henry Lee love. And GW was like,
okay.
Right, no problem. Yeah.
I'll see you again. Got the papers?
Yeah, yeah. Be sure you show up at the inauguration. You know what I mean? So
So
let's get into Iraq a little bit here.
Yeah, because we're going to be talking with our man in Iraq, Borzu Deragahi.
Yes. And what we have on Iraq today, a lot of
stuff. It's just full of hostages, full of death. I mean, now we've got on an Islamic website, Kenneth Bigley, the third hostage. The other two have already been beheaded, two Americans that were taken supposedly by a group loyal to al-Zarqawi.
Zarqawi.
He's pleading for his life, saying that he didn't want to die. He's pleading specifically with British Prime Minister Tony Blair. Now, I don't know what influence Prime Minister Blair would have on the central demand of the people that kidnapped these three hostages, and that is the freeing of female prisoners that are now under U.S. custody.
That's Dr. Germ and Dr. Anthrax.
Yeah.
Yeah, the two women who are in charge of the biological weapons research program for the old Baathist regime. Yeah, why would they want those two free?
But see, now, those are the two that we know about. We're not absolutely certain yet, and I'm not sure even the U.S. military knows, how many female Iraqis are currently in U.S. custody, you know, in the first place. Some women may be in custody as you know, for example, as common criminals or whatever. What it seems like they're asking for is all Iraqi women in U.S. custody to be freed. Now, again, Tony Blair may not be able to affect that. George W. Bush, in his travels around the country, made mention of, you know, the sadness he feels for the hostages that have been killed, but no mention made of you know, talking about any kind of a deal being made or any efforts to try and perhaps apprehend the people that are doing this to Americans. Why is there no statement, we're going to get whoever did this?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, Bush said, basically, he said, quote, the insurgents, quote, use the only tool at their disposal, which is beheadings and death, to try to shake our will. Oh, you mean terror?
Yeah.
And
terror.
I mean, yeah. Well, let's talk to Borzu about it when we come back on Air America Radio.
Are Americans better off than we were 4 years ago? In a new national poll conducted by Mother Jones Magazine, a strong majority of registered voters from across the country claim that the United States has gotten pretty seriously off on the wrong track. And half of those surveyed voted for George W. Bush in the 2000 presidential election. Take the poll yourself and view the complete results at MotherJones.com. Also at MotherJones.com, your daily mojo. Every day, the editors of Mother Jones scour the web for the day's most important stories and post them for you online. Mother Jones, strange name for a magazine, but take a look. See what you think.
Crimes Against Nature, a new book by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., sets the record straight on George W. Bush, corporate greed, and the plunder of America. Crimes Against Nature makes the case that the administration has taken corporate cronyism to unprecedented heights, threatening our health, our national security, and our democracy. Al Franken calls Crimes Against Nature a passionate and devastatingly written attack on the Bush administration. Crimes Against Nature, the national bestseller by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., a HarperCollins book. Now available at bookstores and online at airamericaradio.com.
Pontiac Grand Am.
Oh.
I started getting this noise. I guess it would be a combination of a flute and a bass drum.
Perfect harmony. Car Talk. Weekends at 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. Eastern on NPR Now 106. And noon on Sirius NPR Talk 107.
Has someone offended you? I'm Mark Merrill with today's Family Minute. If a family member, friend, coworker, or even a boss has said or done something to upset you, what should you do?
Tell other people?
Well, no. You need to go to that person and gently let them know how they've hurt you. If they don't respond, bring along one or two other people and approach them again. In doing all this, be sure you're coming to them with clean hands, without any grudges of your own. When you work for unity in your relationships, you'll be amazed at the results. Remember, your family first.
The Family Minute with Mark Merrill is a production of Family First. To find some great resources for strengthening your family, go to FamilyMinute.net. That's FamilyMinute.net or call 1-800-956-8300. That's 1-800-956-8300.
If you had invested $50 in a mutual fund 20 years ago, you would have gotten back $452. If you had invested $50 in the United Negro College Fund, you would have gotten back someone like Michael Jordan. So support the United Negro College Fund and let a kid profit from a college education. Please call 1-800-332-UNCF. Because a mind is a terrible thing to waste. A public service message from the United Negro College Fund and the Ad Council.
Past the hour, it's Morning's Edition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
How'd it go yesterday? The birthday, all right?
Yeah, it went great.
Good.
I really enjoyed myself.
That's great. We'll talk about it in a little while. You're listening to Air America Radio. This is Morning's Edition. On the phone, we have one of our favorite journalists. He's our guy in Baghdad, Borzu Daragahi. Good morning, Borzu.
Hey, Borzu.
Good morning to you guys. How you doing?
We're pretty good. So there's been some confusion about whether one of the two female scientists being held prisoner working on Saddam's chemical weapons program was released yesterday. What do you know about it? Anything?
I mean, not much more than what the wires and the news organizations have. I mean, it's just a matter of cross signals to some extent. The Interior Minister, and the Justice Minister, the Iraqi Justice Minister, said that, you know, indeed we're going to let this woman go. We've been reviewing her case. And then later on, the Army and the U.S. State Department and Alawi from New York even said that there's no such thing. We don't negotiate with terrorists. We're not going to let anyone go at this point.
So it's been pretty, the last few weeks have been pretty violent and bad over there. How would you characterize the last few days? You know, what's going on? How are the people out there dealing with everything?
It just seems like there was some really intense fighting yesterday in Sadr City. Just unbelievable gunfights going on there. I was at a APTN studio for something else, and I was watching some of the footage some of the people in Sadr City were taking of the fighting that was going on. Really intense stuff, like 10 people killed. There were 3 car bomb explosions in Baghdad alone yesterday.
Wow.
There was a car bomb that hit a U.S. Humvee on the highway in the morning. There was a 10:20 a.m. Car bomb that hit a cafe where a bunch of recruits to the Iraqi National Guard were just hanging out. And then there was another car bomb that apparently targeted a U.S. convoy but ended up hitting a bunch of innocent Iraqis.
Wow.
In the Mansour district, you know. So then there was a fighting yesterday, so it was just for us living here, it's just a matter of, you know, trying to avoid it, and if you're covering it, try to get in there like an hour after it happens so you can find out what happened without risking your life.
Jeez.
Incredible. Borzu, do you get a sense that we're hearing reports back here in the States that there are increasing numbers of foreign fighters coming into Iraq to wage some of these pitch battles that we hear about in places like Sadr City and western Baghdad. What is the mix of Iraqis to foreign fighters? The president has kind of demonized the foreign fighters, but really has said there aren't as many insurgents as the media is portraying.
What is a country going to do? I mean, in any situation like this, especially in the Middle East, you know, people blame outsiders for their problems, you know, it's never the Iraqis that are doing it. It's always someone from another country. It's always someone from another neighborhood, always someone from another town. And that just seems to be the way of the Middle East and all of the countries here in terms of the political development. Very few people like to take responsibility for their own country's actions and their own countrymen. There are foreign fighters. There are foreign fighters in Fallujah. There are foreign fighters linked to Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, no doubt, causing some of the mayhem here. But you look through history, you know, the Brits, when they were occupying Iraq, they blamed the Turks, they blamed the Russians, they blamed the communists, they blamed the Jews, they blamed anyone that was really the problem of the situation. It was an unjust and unsustainable occupation. History showed that, you know, there were no foreign fighters in Iraq back then in the 20s. And right now I think it's the same thing. It's just you're looking for convenient scapegoats.
Do you think the country is moving towards civil war? There's been a lot of speculation in the worst case scenario by the intelligence estimate that you could be moving towards civil war. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think that we're still a few steps away from civil war. So far, the people who would wage the civil war are really busy fighting the U.S. and it's Iraqi interim government. It could happen, though. I mean, it very well could happen. You know, just as it happened in Afghanistan. Once the Mujahideen in Afghanistan kicked out the Russians, what do? They turn their guns on each other. And I think that's more likely scenario. But definitely there is this sort of, coalescing of various forces in Iraq. The Islamist forces, whether Sunni or Shia, are getting together. And then the more secular forces, the Kurds and the liberals and the nationalists, are kind of getting close together. And I could see somewhere down the line, a few years from now, where there'll be a civil war, but the dividing line will be between, most likely from what I see, between secularists and religious fundamentalists.
Borzu, how are people like yourself and perhaps some of your colleagues dealing with the constant danger of being kidnapped, the constant danger of someone stopping your car? We've talked to some other people on the ground there who were actually confronted by some insurgents who were, debating on whether or not to take them hostage. There's word that two Italian women have been executed. How is that playing out on the ground? Are you afraid to move around?
You know, I got to tell you, it's really frightening, and it's very scary. Today I had to go do something at a register, some kind of official thing, and this guy wrote down my name, and he was writing down my nationality and my hotel, and I'm like, you know what? I don't want you to write down all of that information. Can you just put a different hotel? Because I don't know where this is going to fall into. And the guy just starts laughing. I'm like, I'm serious. I don't want to end up on Al Jazeera, getting my throat slit. And it's just the most mundane things. You know, my hard drive crashed, and so there's a lot of talented Iraqi people who could fix it, and I'm trying to get it fixed, and going to like computer shops and stuff. I'm terrified. I'm terrified that someone's going to overhear my American accent and give word to someone else, and the next thing I'm going to get kidnapped. And all I'm doing is out here trying to get my computer fixed.
Wow.
So, there's this real sense of paranoia. It's really hard, day-to-day life. At night, we used to go out, maybe visit Iraqi restaurants and stuff like that. Now it's like, no. As a matter of fact, I promised my wife that I wouldn't go to, she's not here now, and I promised her that I would not go anymore to a restaurant at night. Just for fear of being kidnapped, or because you're sitting in an enclosed place for 2 hours. One waiter, one busboy gives a tip to someone, gets a few hundred thousand dinars for it, and you're dead.
Oh, my God. Well, be careful, Borzu, and thanks for talking to us. We'll talk to you soon.
Appreciate it, Borzu.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks a lot. It's been a pleasure. Hope to talk to you soon.
Okay, bye. Be careful. Wow. Wow. That's like chilling. Man.
That was extraordinary.
We got Bev Harris coming up, right?
Yes, we do. We've got the presidential palm pilot, black box voting director Bev Harris, the liberal agenda, and more for you here on Air America Radio.
From 1996 to the year 2000, wages for almost all workers rose steadily and faster than the inflation rate. That hadn't happened since the long period of broadly shared income growth from 1947 to 1974. But here's a reality check. Since the year 2000, average family incomes have stopped growing. Total compensation levels are just slightly higher than they were 15 years ago. Even though today's workers are more likely to have attained a better education than their parents, many are paid about the same income. For example, a substantial portion of men who have a few years of college education will earn less than their fathers did. The solution to restore badly shared income growth is to return to policies that worked in the past. At the Century Foundation, we have ideas for enabling all workers to see their incomes grow faster than the cost of living. When we know the facts, we can find real solutions. Get informed. Visit the Century Foundation online at www.centuryfoundation.org. That's www.centuryfoundation.org.
Air America Radio News, I'm Mike Piazza. British hostage Kenneth Bigley, being held in Iraq, says he fears his time may be running out. He's pleading with his government to meet his kidnappers' demands and win his release. The militant group holding him has already beheaded two American hostages. John Kerry on the sidelines today with a chest cold. Kerry is putting off campaign stops in Iowa and Ohio. Kerry still playing offense against the president. Yesterday, Kerry said Bush's assessment of Iraq shows he's living in a make-believe world. Iraq's interim prime minister is making his first official trip to the White House. Iyad Alawi meets with President Bush today for private talks. The two will also issue a joint statement and take questions about the ongoing fighting in Iraq. A study says low-income workers who have insurance are still getting squeezed by the high costs of health care. It says more and more of those who suffer chronic health problems are having to spend more than 5% of their income on out-of-pocket medical costs. You're listening to Air America Radio News. I'm Mike Piazza.
Larry, I can't see you anymore.
What?
You don't have a job, a car, and you live in your parents' basement. You're 43.
I'll be 43 next month.
Grow up, Larry.
I have a boat.
Sure you do.
No, really, it's a Larson Senza sport boat. Yeah, that's it. A sport boat. Yeah, and it's fully loaded with Sirius.
Win a 2005 Larson Senza sport boat in the Sirius Dog Days of Summer Sweepstakes. For all the rules and how to enter, go to Sirius.com.
Snap out of it. How'd you pay for this? You can't buy a toothbrush. Idiot.
Hey, this is Dave Ramsey, and this is your Daily Money Makeover. Blake is getting married and wants the order of his financial attack. My advice next.
Federal college loan rates are now at their lowest levels in history. So if you currently have high-interest student loans, it's time to refinance. Just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. With one call, you could be on your way to saving thousands. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE.
Blake needs a financial game plan.
So I have an engagement ring that's going to happen. I plan on buying a new car over the next year, and I'm hoping to get into a new house by the end of next year as well.
Wow, how much do you make a year?
Between the two of us, we really right around $90,000 a year.
How much do you have in savings?
$2,500 at this time.
How much are you going to spend on a ring?
Probably about $2,300.
And so we got some savings to do before we buy a nice used car, right?
Yeah, Neil, see, that's one of our problems is we tend to spend like drunken sailors.
Well, dude, I mean, if you're going to work and make $100,000, you ought to have something to show for it more than a big bunch of payments. That's what this show's about every day, is getting control of your most powerful wealth-building tool, which is your income. I want you to have a nice car. I just don't want to have you. I think I'd probably walk right up the schedule you gave me, and I'd do ring, then cash for a decent car, move up in car, and then start saving, have an emergency fund in place, and about a year after we're married, we start talking about a down payment on a house.
This has been your Daily Money Makeover with best-selling author and America's most trusted source for financial straight talk, Dave Ramsey.
My new watch that my wife gave me for my birthday, it came in the mail today, says it's 33 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley. You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
A beautiful watch it is.
Thank you very much. It is nice. It's a Seiko. We're not going to. Let's get to the real business. All right, Ramon, take it easy. I don't know what. He had a mask on today.
Wow.
A George Bush mask. That was weird, but it gets to the point where you just, all right, you just get us what we need. Here's the president's schedule for today. 6:30 a.m., wake up, stay on message. John Kerry is soft on Cat Stevens and other 70s folk rock singers. 8:10 p.m., speak at ceremony marking the opening of the National Museum of the American Indian. Note, insist on being called Great White Father and use the phrase, I am the peace pipe president. 11:20 a.m., meet with Prime Minister Alawi of Iraq, tell him he's doing a magnificent job controlling one-eighth of his country. 12:05 p.m., have photos taken with Alawi, lighten the mood by posing with our heads stuck through a wooden cutout of a cop and a gorilla. 4:15 p.m., fly to Maine, speak at rally in Bangor, praise the state for only needing one syllable, not like that wasteful Massachusetts. Massachusetts. 7 p.m. back in Washington. Call National Weather Service. See if you can get them to name the next hurricane after Gene, Hurricane Carrie. Promise them some new satellites or something. 8 p.m. call Porter Goss. Congratulate him on becoming the new director of the CIA. Tell him to submit enemies list by Friday. 10 p.m. bedtime. Note, delete morning is broken as wake-up CDs. Tremendous.
So he's going to the same place that they landed the plane with Cat Stevens on it.
Yeah.
Bangor, Maine.
We finally, I figured all that out. It just made sense. We were talking about that yesterday, and it's obviously on the route that they fly over, come right through Bangor, so they brought it down before he was going to go into Washington. Don't you know who I am, man? Boy, the young was with me, man. No, come on. Morning has broke. No, I'm him. That's a new name. Dude!
Never mind that USF stuff.
This is I'm very happy to have this woman on. I've wanted her on for a long time, and she's been fighting the good fight. She's the executive director of Black Box Voting. She's going to talk to us about the evil Diebold machines. Good morning, Deb Harris.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming. So you're doing a great thing, and we've never had you on our show. So why don't we just talk about how easy it is to actually hack into the voting program that will be used on these voting machines.
Well, it's not really even hacking. That's how easy it is.
Right.
I call it actually editing.
Really?
In fact, we went out last week and we shot video footage of a trained chimpanzee doing it.
Come on.
Wait. You got a chimp to alter the voting machines?
What we did was we found something from Diebold where they promised that they had a security feature that was so excellent that no human could alter it. So we thought, oh, that's a challenge. No human can alter the audit log. Now, the audit log is the thing that supposedly records, it's like the black box in an airplane. It records every event that happens. So
right.
If somebody came in and did something devious,
mm-hmm.
it would show up.
Mm-hmm.
And it says in there, they sold Georgia $54 million worth of machines. And one of the promises they made is that the audit log cannot be altered by human intervention.
Right. Yeah.
So we went and found Baxter.
Uh-huh.
Baxter is a chimpanzee, but now he's an above-average chimp.
Really?
He had his own television show in Germany.
Oh, okay. Whoa. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So he's sort of a celebrity chimp.
A veteran entertainer.
Yeah.
And it did take 10 minutes to teach him how to alter the audit log.
Wow. That's hilarious because, you know what, some people don't even know how to register to vote.
Yeah, right.
Oh, that's correct. But essentially, Baxter managed to alter the audit log. It's really hard. You have to double-click the file.
Uh-huh.
We had trouble with that, so we gave him a pass on things that involved using a mouse.
Okay.
And then you have to hit the delete key.
Uh-huh.
And the enter key.
Well, fortunately, since he's probably had to respond to a lot of fan email, he wasn't so strange to the keyboard, right?
Yeah, he handled that real well.
So he actually pulled it off, though. He altered it.
He did, yes. And so, after we showed that video clip here in Washington, D.C.,
uh-huh.
We invited Cynthia McKinney from Georgia. After all, it was Georgia that they sold these machines to for $54 million based on this. No one can alter it. We asked her to repeat Baxter's feat yesterday. And she said, this is the worst IQ test ever to follow a chimp and have to try to do something. But she did, indeed. Also alter the audit log.
Well, I imagine the Republican response will be, well, that's really cheating because a lot of our voters aren't as smart as a chimp.
Well, no, I have to tell you, I had a reporter from a wire service in one of the most strange questions I've ever been asked by the media say yesterday, well, yes, but how would the chimp, and she was serious, but a chimp couldn't get into the voting machine undetected. you'd probably have to put like a security guard uniform on it.
Well, that's hilarious.
Yeah, well.
This is a false threat. There are no monkeys that are going to be trying to vote. What wire service was that, Bev? Do you remember?
Oh, I'll be nice to them. They might write a nicer story.
Oh.
Anything terrible about them. But no, it was just, it really is not difficult, and that's what's so frightening about this is that, and the election officials, it's like the election officials are taking safeguards, but they're taking the wrong ones because they don't understand where the attack points are, and they've just, once you show them, which is one of the best things that citizens can do, by the way, what we're now doing is sending citizens who have a modest amount of familiarity as a computer user out to their election officials. They can bring their laptop, and we'll send them a CD or let them download the files, and they can show their local election officials how easy it is to rig an election, because usually the election officials don't realize this. They don't know how it's done. As soon as they see it, in fact, we showed one official.
Yeah.
And this was his response. We had him do it. I walked him through it as we walked Baxter through it. And he sat down and he said, "Does Diebold know this?"
Well, you know, when we come back, why don't we talk about, you know, what is being done and how are they still selling machines and why are people still buying with all this information out there? Also, there was a bit of a movement to try and get Oprah to book you as a guest, and I want to check in with you on that. Will you hang out with us? Okay. We'll be back in a second with Bev Harris here on Air America Radio. I got an idea. Just a reminder, I don't want to pressure you, but you got to do this soon, all right? Register to vote, please. You can do it on morningsedition.com where it says register to vote. Thank you.
Your team takes possession and races toward the end zone. The roar of the crowd is deafening, except to you, because you are the team mascot.
Hey, guys.
And inside your big furry suit,
it's real hard to see out of this thing.
The game sounds just a little bit different.
Guys?
The NCAA on Sirius.
Guys.
Get in on the excitement. Go to Sirius.com for the full broadcast schedule.
Speak out on Sirius.
Get serious about your vote.
Hi, this is Joanne from Poughkeepsie, New York. I'm voting for John Kerry. And whoever you're going to vote for, that's okay. We can still be friends, but please vote in the upcoming November election.
I'm Larry from New York City, and I am going with George W. Bush in 04. Thanks very much.
This is Rich. Tell the two candidates that are running for president, will you stop beating each other up? Just start talking about some jobs. Will you have the people I know are unemployed? The economy stinks. Get the word out that we need some jobs. Fix the economy, would you? Tell them.
Hi, this is Pat from Oklahoma. On Election Day, I'm going to go out and I'm going to cast my vote for George Bush. And if you don't like it, then you better get off your butt, get down to the polls and cast your vote for the other guy.
Tell us why this presidential election is important to you.
Call 1-877-33-SIRIUS and press 4.
To speak out on Sirius. Today, one out of 13 children suffers from asthma, accounting for nearly one-third of all pediatric emergency room visits. But while your child may suffer from asthma, asthma doesn't have to make your child suffer. There are simple ways you can prevent your child's next attack. To learn more, call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS, log on to www.noattacks.org, or call your doctor, because even one attack is one too many. Brought to you by the EPA and the Ad Council. Our young people need us now more than ever.
Everyone's popping pills and smoking grass.
Sure, they look up to our superstars, but what they really want is the time and energy of caring adults who make a difference in their lives. A personal hero. You can be that hero. Get involved and help keep our young people drug-free. Your time is their future.
He's not on drugs. He's just weird.
To learn more, call 1-800-729-6686. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
What's up, y'all? This is Jay Book.
Yo, yo, this is Raz B.
Yo, what's up? This is Lil Fizz.
Yo, what up? I'm Marion.
And we're B2K.
Right now, we working in the studio.
And that's a lot of work. When we go on tour, we perform live.
We have to know our dance routines, words to the songs, music.
And we have to be on point every time. Our music is pretty energetic.
I mean, it's a real hard job.
We can't look sloppy on stage. That's why we don't have time for drugs.
You want to get somewhere?
Forget about drugs.
A message from Partnership for a Drug-Free America and MAP.
Visit drugfreeamerica.org.
It's 44 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Morning Sedition. You're listening to Air America Radio. We are broadcasting from New York City. We're talking with Executive Director of Black Box Voting, Bev Harris. So, Bev, the few questions I want to cover here is, now all this information has been out for months. It continues to get out there. People are aware of this. Why are state governments still buying these machines?
In some cases, they're just bamboozled by the vendors. I mean, the vendors just keep saying that these things are not true, and it's, you know, it's, okay, let's put it this way. They're getting lied to.
It's the alternate reality of the Republican universe.
You know, you just tell a big whopper of a lie,
right,
and people just can't believe you'll just tell them a barefaced lie, and so they just say it must be right. Now, as for the local election officials, that's a more complicated situation, because now they are so dependent on technicians from the vendors that they can't run an election. You know, they've got an election to put on in 5 weeks now. And if those vendor technicians aren't there to help them, they can't put the election on because they don't understand their own equipment.
So now a corrupt elections official can't even be corrupt without the help of a techie.
No, and you know, it's not their fault they don't understand their software because they've signed contracts with these vendors. Typically, the contracts forbid them to learn how the software works.
This is unbelievable. So now what is happening? Now what happened with Oprah? Did she call you?
We're still working on it, and we still need you guys' help. We're getting close, actually. We're getting nibbles, and I think we'll get there. But we need people contacting
Oprah. What do we need to do?
Just do whatever you can to contact Oprah. If you know a contact, they're great. If you, because we do need this kind of national exposure, and it is getting results. And the other thing that people can do, we have a secret plan. We've been recruiting volunteers to monitor the elections, and we have about 2,600 now. But
what, you just hang around?
Huh?
Like secret monitors?
It's like there's a lot of other volunteers out monitoring the elections. We've got a very special thing we're going to do with our volunteers that we're not revealing, and we're going to start it next week. And it's going to go from next week up until the election, and it's basically going to be some preventive measures that need to be, and so we're going to need a bunch of people to help with it, but it's going to be very cool.
Where do those people go? Where do you want them to contact you?
They go to blackboxvoting.org, and right on the front page, they can sign up online. And
for this secret task.
We're slow at getting to people because we're running all over the country, but mm-hmm. I'll tell you, we've got a really cool plan. We're going to start unveiling it next week, and it's going to help. It really will help.
Okay.
Bev Harris, are all of these electronic voting machines, no matter the manufacturer, equally bad, equally as vulnerable to some form of sabotage?
Put it this way. We found the software for two of the four big manufacturers. Both of them have severe, stunning security flaws and are very manipulatable, almost to the point that it was designed to be that way. I mean, I hate to say that, but it's not, the Sequoia voting software, which we also demonstrated yesterday in Washington, it is designed so that you can rewrite the commands that count the vote during the middle of the election from the main interface. Now, at least with the Diebold system, you have to go into a place that's hidden.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you know where it is, you're in.
Right.
With the Sequoia software, you sit down at the main program, and it's got menu items that actually allow you to rewrite the source code.
So with Diebold, only the people that understand the Diebold machine can get in there and play with it.
No, actually, you have to, only people who've, like, taken a high school computer class or use computers. I was able to find how to get in. The problem with the Diebold system, and the main problem we're worried about, by the way, is with the central tabulator. So it's not just these touchscreen machines, but it's with the machine. You know, there's sort of like one machine to rule them all. All the votes come to this one machine at the end of the day.
Okay.
Well, the problem with it is there's more than one way to get into the program. And you don't need a password and so forth to get in going in the back ways. And it's very easy to do. I was able to figure it out myself.
This is mind-blowing.
You kind of navigate through the files and double-click something. With Sequoia, though, you can actually rewrite the source code, which is the commands that tell the computer how to count the votes.
Ugh.
And you can do that just from opening the program. In Sequoia, you know, I wouldn't be able to because I don't know how to write Visual Basic scripts, but a lot of high school kids do.
Right. That's
and,
unbelievable.
You know, tens of thousands of people do. So if you get out of Sequoia Terminal, you can do some very bad things.
Well, here, I'll play devil's advocate from the Republican point of view. Yeah, but you know what? High school kids aren't old enough to vote. But let me ask you one thing. Now, on the business, the corporate level, Diebold, there are reasons not to trust this company, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just wanted you to tell my audience that.
Well, you know, see, the thing people don't realize is actually Diebold Election Systems isn't even kind of really Diebold. It's actually an acquisition that they picked up a couple years ago. And what they did, and a lot of companies do this, they picked up this acquisition and they never really apparently looked at the software, who was designing it or anything. They just went out and started selling it and put their trade name all over it.
Right.
So, you know, we have a sales presentation made to Georgia, and they said, you know, the Diebold company has been in business for 100 years with security projects, you know, products. And
what's the name of the parent company?
Well, the company they bought, now it's called Diebold, but they acquired a company called Global Election Systems, which is a tiny Canadian company with about 12 guys who are programming it. It turns out that a bunch of those guys were crooks, and literally crooks. Some of them are still in jail. And
oh, my
two
God.
Two of them are still in jail. And so I would say that the stockholders have a legitimate beef with Diebold for not doing due diligence because...
Mm-hmm.
Well, unless they knew that they were crooks and that was part of their, you know, profile of what they wanted in an election company.
Yeah. There's no reason to think that a lot of CEOs aren't crooks.
But, you know, but the guys were amazing. It was the three guys who founded Global Election Systems, which is the company that they bought. Who, by the way, the guys who were with Global Election Systems are still the guys who are programming the machine.
All right, let's finish this one. Let's take one more break, Bev. You got time?
Sure.
Okay, well, we'll talk about those guys when we come back in just a minute on Air America Radio.
Stop whining. That's what head of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, Tom Donahue, told workers who just lost their high-tech jobs to overseas outsourcing. Stop whining. Analysts say this is just the beginning. Millions of more jobs could be lost in the next few years. But it's good for the U.S. economy, according to Donahue. Good for the U.S. economy? Are they kidding? These high-tech jobs were supposed to be the jobs of the future. Jobs with good pay and good benefits. Now, millions are at risk. That's why we, the Communications Workers of America, are doing something about it. We're fighting to end tax breaks that encourage companies to ship our jobs overseas. We're helping tech workers organize so they have strength at the bargaining table when it comes to salary, health care and pension benefits, and working conditions. Learn more at techsunite.org, because America's future is on the line. A message from the Communications Workers of America, the Union for the Information Age, and proud supporter of Air America.
There he is.
I have a Pontiac Grand Am.
Oh.
I started getting this noise. I guess it would be a combination of a flute and a bass drum.
Perfect harmony. Car Talk. Weekends at 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. Eastern on NPR Now 106. And noon on Sirius NPR Talk 107.
Here's the 2-1. Swing and a long one. It is.
Hi, I'm Barry Bonds for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. In my league, we hit home runs without a designated hitter. But if you want to get home safe, there should always be a designated driver. So when you're with someone who is drinking, please take their keys. Call a cab or drive them home yourself, because friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Let's be blunt about marijuana. Did you know, as many kids do, that blunt is street slang for a hollowed-out cigar filled with marijuana? Sometimes blunts contain marijuana mixed with cocaine, crack, PCP, methamphetamine, even embalming fluid. How's that for a reality check? Learn to have a blunt talk with your kids about drugs. Call 1-800-729-6686 for a free copy of Keeping America's Youth Drug-Free.
Hey, what's up with the sink?
Somebody left it on.
Really?
Yeah, I've been in here 3 times since this morning. Still going.
Okay, that is so not cool.
What's not cool?
Look at the faucet.
Oh, that's so weird.
Should we do something?
You guys weren't using this, were you?
No.
Don't just take a stand. Act. The most powerful ways to register and vote. It's ridiculously simple. Log on to registerandvote2004.org and take action. A public service announcement brought to you by the Ag Council.
Back, it's 54 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition on the phone, Executive Director of Black Box Voting, Bev Harris. So, Bev, we're just about to, we've only got a couple minutes here, so let's quickly reveal why the CEOs and the people in charge of Diebold are evil and where people can go to get involved.
Well, you know, we were talking about the company that is actually the acquisition that is still kind of running these voting systems. That company, interestingly enough, was founded by three guys, all of whom got in trouble for stock fraud. Now, think about this. if you own an election company and you like to do stock market manipulation.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't think we need to go any further.
Exactly.
And by the way, of the four people we found with felony, well, five actually, with felony convictions out of that small group up in Canada, two of them are still in prison.
And these are the people we're putting in charge of our elections.
There's real, well, I guess we would say I wouldn't consider it prudent to put this kind of
unbelievable.
What we can do, you know, what I'm still working on, I'm going to be working on this up until the day of the election, is to get preventive measures in place, even if we have to do them piece by piece, county by county. We're going to get as many as we can. I just got caught into this idea that we're going to go ahead and wait, and it's too late, and we're just going to wait for it to melt down, and then we'll run around and sue afterwards. I think if we do that, we do lasting damage to the trust in the democratic system.
And so it's all the information people need is at blackboxvoting.com.
Yeah, go there and just trust me, sign up, because we've got a really good set of things that we'll be doing in the next month, and it is kind of that
.org.
Piecemeal. One by one, county by county, but we will get procedures in place that will at least help mitigate the risks.
This is great, and I've been dying to talk to you, and I'm glad we did. Thanks for talking to us, Bev.
Appreciate it, Bev.
Okay, so that's blackboxvoting.org. There's all the information you need. If that doesn't get you worked up to take action, I really don't know what will. Also, register to vote if you can. You can morningsedition.com, go to register to vote to get the information on how to do that.
Let's make sure our audience understood what Bev Harris just said. The American electoral system has been put in the hands of a group of people, almost half of whom are convicted felons.
Right.
That's what she just said.
For stock fraud. People
stock fraud.
Willing to manipulate stocks.
Felonious stock fraud.
How easily bought and how... And they have no conscience, apparently. They're easily corruptible with money.
Yeah.
And also, we don't even fully know their political leanings. I had heard that one of the guys is definitely pro-Bush and had guaranteed Bush the presidency. That, of course, is the liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. Please write these down. It'll help you today. 1. Produce dance remix of Bush's speech to the UN, adding screams, gunshots, and fart noises. 2. Change outgoing answering machine message to, "Hi, I'm not in right now. 1,100 Americans have died in Iraq and Afghanistan." 3. Criticize other Muslim folk rockers for not rallying around Cat Stevens. 4. Encourage possible North Korea ballistic missile test as a big step towards just figuring themselves out. Just figuring themselves out. They're working through something. Can I talk, mushmouth Marin? 5. Today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. Why don't they arrest Ted Nugent, huh? I mean, he calls himself the Motor City Madman. That's it, huh? For now?
That's it for now.
What's
but in the
up?
Next hour of Morning's Edition, Iraq, Birth of a Nation, Rapture Watch, we talk the Electoral College with an expert and Mark Maron's Dream Diary, all on Air America Radio.
Soon, all over-the-counter medicines will have one thing in common, simplicity. That's because all over-the-counter medicines will feature new, easier-to-read labels that clearly show their ingredients, uses, warnings, and directions. Because if there's one symptom we all want to relieve, it's confusion. For more information, call the Food and Drug Administration at 1-888-INFO-FDA. That's 1-888-INFO-FDA. The new label. It's clearly better.
My opinion about the world counts, and I have something to say.
Young people today are acutely aware of the world around them. And optimists give these youth a chance to be heard through their Optimist Essay Contest.
I want to express my feelings, and I want the world to know what I think.
Our local optimists are giving young people that opportunity through the Optimist Essay Contest. Optimists, bringing out the best in kids.
Compromise off. Serious on. Uncompromised music and entertainment.
Uncompromised music and entertainment.
Serious. It's on.
Air America Radio News. I'm Mike Piazza. Two separate militant groups are claiming responsibility for the execution of two Italian women taken hostage in Iraq. Neither claim could be immediately verified. The new posting about the purported beheadings of Simona Pari and Simona Toretta appeared on a little-known website and was signed by a group calling itself the Supporters of al-Zawahiri. That group's name refers to Ayman al-Zawahiri, a deputy of the al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden. That same group was the first to claim responsibility for the September 7th capture of the two women. Planned campaign stops for John Kerry on hold today as he recovers from a cold and raspy throat. Before losing his voice, Kerry told the Associated Press, saying that President Bush missed an opportunity when addressing the United Nations.
George Bush missed a huge opportunity at the United Nations to try to bring other countries to the table. I don't think he's providing the leadership we need. I will do a better job of dealing with Iraq and winning the war and fighting the war on terror. Period.
Kerry also told the Associated Press President Bush let Osama bin Laden get away from Tora Bora. Republican lawmakers predicting swift passage of an extension of three popular middle-class tax cuts, the extensions already approved by the House and Senate negotiators. The measure keeps the child tax credit at $1,000. It also continues an expanded 10% tax rate that lowers tax bills for virtually all taxpayers, and it continues to offer married couples tax savings. The conference panel approved the bill despite objections from Democrats who said the tax cuts should be paid for by tax increases in other areas. They said that would limit the impact on the government's soaring budget deficit. The tax breaks are estimated to cost the government nearly $146 billion over 10 years. Japan said it has obtained intelligence indicating that North Korea may be preparing to test fire a short-range missile in what would be the latest provocation from the communist country. Government officials convened an emergency task force team in the prime minister's office after intelligence showed that North Korea appears to be beefing up troops and equipment around the missile launch bases, said Shigumi Terui, a spokesman for the prime minister's office. Media reports citing government officials said an immediate launch was not expected. South Korea said missile-related activities have been detected in the north by U.S. and South Korean militaries. Five dead in an Israeli army post after Palestinian gunmen slipped by guards and killed three Israeli soldiers in a fierce gun battle. Two of the attackers were shot dead. The attack on the outpost guarding the isolated Morag settlement in southern Gaza came a day after a 19-year-old Palestinian woman killed two officers of the paramilitary border police in a suicide bombing at a crowded Jerusalem bus stop. It was the first suicide bombing in the city since February. Syrian soldiers continue to march from Lebanon today. This, a partial troop withdrawal that began 2 days ago. The redeployment of the Syrian troops in Lebanon is seen as an attempt to appease Western supporters, sponsors rather, of the UN Security Council resolution. I'm Mike Piazza, Air America.
Hey, Jimmy, what's up?
Hey, man, turn on 24. Vince Scalzo's on.
Oh, yeah, I completely forgot. I got to call Sally. Hello?
Hey, Sally, Vince Scalzo's on Serious Disorder 24.
Oh, I know, I got it on. He just played some Tom Waits, then into a Lorraine tune. It was great. Oh, listen, I got to call Jim.
Hey, Sally, yeah, I know why you're calling. I've got Vin on right now.
Did you catch that interview with Suzanne Vega?
Vin Scalzo's Idiot's Delight. Freeform radio at its finest. Turn a friend on. Sunday nights at 8 Eastern on Serious Disorder 24.
Hey, this is Dave Ramsey, and this is your Daily Money Makeover. Jill and her husband want to start a small business to pay off $76,000 in debt. My advice next.
Federal college loan rates are now at their lowest levels in history. So if you currently have high-interest student loans, it's time to refinance. Just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. With one call, you could be on your way to saving thousands. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE.
Jill has $76,000 in debt and wants to start a business for extra income.
We earn about $55,000 a year, and we want to start up a small part-time business for extra income and eventually to go full-time with it. And I wanted to get your opinion on what type of business you would recommend if we were to try to do something like that.
Something you can do with cash with minimal startup amount, that you start with more of the sweat of your brow and your brains than you do some kind of huge investment to get started because you don't have any money. You're broken in debt.
Yeah,
secondly,
exactly.
It needs to be something that really lights your fire, that you could see yourself doing when you're 60 and still smiling about it. And that means you need to be called to this. It needs to be a passion for you. Dan Miller, who did the books 48 Days to Creative Income and 48 Days to the Work You Love, says do something that you already probably know how to do and enjoy doing.
This has been your Daily Money Makeover with best-selling author and America's most trusted source for financial straight talk, Dave Ramsey.
Stuart, how are those hedges coming, little man?
Dad!
Sorry, you're not little. You're five. Man, you're holding a 10-horsepower gas hedge trimmer. I should watch myself, huh? So, fire her up and show those hedges who they're messing with.
But I could get hurt.
Don't focus on the negative. Come on, go get him, killer! Ah, that's the battle cry of a lawn warrior. Now, steady the blade! Where are those hedges?
Dad!
Think of the trimmer as an extension of your arm. Come on, keep that arm away from
the cat.
Oh, and the neighbor's new car.
You wouldn't treat your child like an adult, so why put them in adult seatbelts? If they're under 4'9", they need a booster seat.
Dad, make it stop.
Come back here. You can do the neighbor's shrubs after you finish ours.
For more information, go to boosterseat.gov. This message brought to you by the Ad Council and the U.S. Department of Transportation.
Hi, I'm Mark Maron. You're listening to Air America Radio at 6 past the hour, and this is Morning's Edition.
Geniuses, poets, you know who you are. Liberals who have no sense of humor, good morning to you. Special good morning to you. Always like your input. Why don't you replace Mark with Amy Goodman or somebody? Why don't you shut up? I just O'Reilly'd it. Sorry. Thank you for your input. Very nice of you. There's room for everybody here at the table. Yeah. How you doing, Riley?
I'm doing great.
So what happened? Your birthday yesterday, what happened?
It was great. It was great. Yeah, I got my wife took me out to a wonderful lunch at a really pretty restaurant that was overlooking the Hudson.
Uh-huh.
You know, that was cool.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, my daughter came home.
What's the present? What'd you give you?
Some speakers, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
What kind of speakers? Like big ones? Small ones?
No, small bookshelves. Polk. You know, decent quality speakers.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're hooked up and ready for the festivities.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Then got some music.
How big are they? Because I'm in the market for some speakers.
Oh, these are very small speakers, and they're not expensive at all. And, you know, Polk is a good quality
speaker. Polk Audio.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, are there bookshelf speakers?
Bookshelves.
Not for a computer kind of thing.
No. Bookshelf speakers. You can hang them up on the wall, actually.
Because I just got that Sirius satellite radio. They sent me one.
Okay.
Yeah, not because of Air America, oddly, but because I'm an apparent.
Oh, never that.
Yeah, no, it wasn't like, you know, hey, thanks for being on our network kind of thing. But they did send me one, and I hooked it up because they gave it to me for free.
Mm-hmm.
And I bought some cheap sort of Radio Shack $29 ones. They sound okay, but I think if I hooked up some relatively decent bookshelf speakers to them, they'd sound great. But they need to have a built-in preamp, or else I got to run through a stereo.
Okay, well, you know what you can do? You can get self-powered speakers.
Yeah, that's what I need.
Yeah, they're heavy, but you can get some really, really good ones. I had a friend who has since moved to Moab, Utah, of all places.
Really?
And he was the one that turned me on to self-powered speakers.
Let's talk about this Utah issue. What's he running from? What's he afraid of? You don't move from New Jersey to Utah.
He was from Manhattan,
uh-huh,
Utah.
He was
a roadie for many years. And his wife opened a gift shop in Moab, Utah.
Oh, that's cool. I mean, it sounds like Utah's beautiful, but, you know, Salt Lake City's weird, man.
Salt Lake City is a very strange place.
I did a gig at a Jewish community center in Salt Lake City, Utah. Like, you'd think there wouldn't be one, but you know what I mean? Like, but it's weird. There's a little cluster of Jews out there,
mm-hmm,
that are just surrounded by all this Mormon weirdness. It's like a theocracy out there. They shut the town down early. It's a very strange place, and you felt it.
Really?
It felt weird. You know how you feel when Mormons come to your door? It's like a lot of that.
Really?
You know, they're sort of sitting there, standing there, you know, dressed like the Blues Brothers with their weird pins on,
mm-hmm,
you know.
Say, what are you doing out of your room?
Asking you if you know if there are any Latinos that live in your building because we think they're vulnerable to what we're trying to do. We're here collecting Latinos. They always do that in Queens. Like, I'll open my door and they're like, oh, we're not going to get this guy. Where are the people that don't speak English in the building? Are there any of those kind of people? Because we can really trick them with our smoke and mirrors. You know, we've got all the names in the mountain thing.
But you answer the door, though.
I always do. Sometimes I used to bring them in. When I was just getting out of L.A., when I was all screwed up on, you know, conspiracies and mystical weirdness, and I thought I was, you know, working for some unseen, you know, demonic force. Like, I remember I was at home in Albuquerque hanging out, you know, in my red bathrobe. You know what I mean?
Oh, wow.
These Mormons came over. Hey, you know what? They're actually Jehovah's Witnesses.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Two women, you know. And Jehovah's Witnesses, not unlike people who are born again, a lot of ways have been through the ringer before they come around to God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I can always feel that in a person. I like people who've been through the ringer and don't find God, but just, you know, continue following,
following the ringer.
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, they always have good stories and they're interesting and they don't, you know, moralize in the same way that people who have come into religion later in life do. And I just invited them in, and Mark, I scared the hell out of them. You know what I mean? I was like, so who do you people work for? Because I'm working for Satan, you know? And these poor
and they
women
started looking for the exit real fast.
Well, that's it. The older woman said, maybe we ought to come back. And I'm like, yeah, right. See you later, man. Wow. You know? And sure enough, like, I thought they wouldn't come back, but they came back with a guy.
Really?
You know, well, because they're persistent.
Yeah, they were going to beat me down. They brought their comic books and everything. But maybe I haven't read our silly magazine. No, you're right, I haven't. But you know who I'm working for. So anyway, dude, what is this? Did you see that advertisement? The Bush campaign puts an advertisement.
Oh, the Kerry windsurfing advertisement.
And I'm watching. I'm like, well, wow. I'm just sitting there going, well, that's cool. You know, he knows how to windsurf. You know what I mean? Like, that's great. Look at it. That's a dude that's an athletic guy. You know, he's out there windsurfing. They're trying to make it look like. You got, what I don't understand is, like, the nerve of this guy, a president, and his, you know, propaganda arm. You know, trying to make fun of a guy. You know, at Kerry's age, getting up there on the board and balancing and doing a good job at it. And Bush can't even stay on a bike.
You know what this is? You know what.
He gets on a bike. He gets up. He scrapes his face up. Karen Hughes said it right here. Karen Hughes, the evil Lenny Riefenstahl of the Bush, you know, propaganda arm. Quote: remind Senator Kerry that his choice of leisure activities reinforces his shifting positions on the very important issues of war and peace. I would suggest Senator Kerry needs to consider the impact of his own words. But so they were trying to make a metaphor out of Kerry on a windsurfing board. Yet the real metaphor. For is Bush can't stay on a bike, yet every time he falls off it, a little team of people in a tie come up to him, put him back on the bike and say, don't worry, we'll blame the earth for it.
Two things you need to know about this windsurfing ad. One, they're scared. That's why they're doing it.
Petrified.
Petrified. And maybe a little later on we'll get a chance to play a little piece of President Bush talking about No Child Left Behind, and you can feel the fear in his voice. Now, you may think, folks, that we're exaggerating when we say something like this, but later on we'll play that, and you'll understand. Bush is scared. But the other thing that this is doing is trying to reinforce the idea that John Kerry is an elitist. He's a windsurfer.
Yeah, I get that, but you know what? That it just doesn't work because, you know, windsurfing, you know, I don't care what they think. It's like snowboard. It's not an elitist thing. It's an evolution of a challenging sport. It's like extreme sports. It's not.
They don't think it through like that.
This is a guy. Look at George Bush. I mean, Kerry was a hockey player. He played all kinds of sports in college. Bush was a cheerleader. This is a guy that couldn't even, you know, hit a ball. He couldn't be on a team. He couldn't, you know what I mean?
But he got a girl to stand on his shoulders.
Yeah, but it's amazing that, you know, he learned how to fly a plane. But the audacity of this, an unathletic guy who spends his weekends barely being able to ride a mountain bike, all right, picking tumbleweeds off his fence at his animalist compound out in Texas that he calls a ranch, you know, judging a guy, like, the only thing I see is, like, that's a, you know, so the Kerry's an athletic guy who does something I can't do. You know what I mean?
He did something I won't do. I'm scared of heights, so you can imagine windsurfing doesn't work for me.
How's that got to do with anything with heights?
Huh?
it's not flying. I mean, windsurfing is just sort of on the water. It's not like, here we go, we're going up. You don't take off.
Oh, I'm thinking of parasailing. Parasailing, that's what it is. Okay, yeah, I'm confused.
Parasailing doesn't take a lot of skill. Parasailing is just like, hold on! Windsurfing, you actually have to hold the sail and steer it. It's like
like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I figure that's... See, that, to them, If you're in Texas, I guess, they figure that that's kind of like, you know, well, that's the thing, something that people that live in Newport, Rhode Island.
Yeah, right. It's like yachting. You're absolutely right. The metaphor they're trying to make is that, look at this guy. And I think they're scared, and I think this stuff is sticking. There's more important things to talk about, and for them to be that trivial at a time like this, when people are being beheaded every other day, insurgency is out of control, the war in Iraq has gotten away from us, yet they're sitting there going, look at him on his surfboard. What a silly little man.
That's right.
The Swiftboat guys, you know, they're putting out another ad. And I got to be honest with you, I watch those ads and I see John Kerry in the 60s, and I'm like, finally, man, let's get that's the guy we need to be president.
Yeah.
You know, a guy who's made decisions in his life, who understands things, who's been critical of power, and is willing to make different decisions to be, you know, when he is in power. I get very excited.
Well, see, Kerry understands, and he's starting to hammer this home, that George W. Bush is living in a fantasy world, because it is a fantasy world that you just described, where John Kerry's windsurfing has anything whatsoever to do with what's going on in Iraq and what's going on with this man's presidency.
And the truth of the matter is, Mark Riley, it comes down to like three states, right? Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Florida.
Yes, those are the three states.
Electoral votes. Now, if you're like me, and I'm only assuming that some of you are, maybe not the woman who wants to replace me with Amy Goodman, but if you're like me, the Electoral College is sort of a baffling, mystifying thing. I don't quite understand it, and I want to understand it. I want to understand why it was put into place. I want to understand, you know, what electoral votes means and why, if the president wins the popular vote, there's electoral votes. Like, to me, it's just sort of like, what do you mean there's other numbers?
Yeah, right.
But he won with the real numbers. The real number is the number of people, right? But what are the other numbers? Like, I'm that stupid on some level. And every time I've tried to understand it, I still don't quite understand it. And we got a guy coming on in a second, who's going to help us understand it.
John Fortier.
Yes, he is a guy who understands it.
He is a research fellow at the American Enterprise Institute and author of After the People Vote, A Guide to the Electoral College.
Right, and don't jump your, you know, don't start going, oh my God, he's a research fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, but aren't they evil? No, this dude is here to, you know, he knows what he's talking about with this thing, and that's why we have him here, because I need it explained to me. So it's 16 past the hour, I'm going to become learned in a second here on Air America Radio.
This year, you are going to quit smoking. Whether you've said it for years or you're trying for the very first time, there's a revolutionary new system that's guaranteed to help you succeed or your money back. Smoke RX has a 95% success rate, so we guarantee that you'll be completely smoke-free and cravings-free in as little as 1 week. Unlike gums or patches, Smoke RX is a complete system that includes natural herbs to curb your cravings safely without nicotine. Best of all, Smoke RX starts to work immediately. Come on, aren't you willing to give yourself 1 week to quit? We're so confident that Smoke RX will work for you that we're giving away a free month's supply with all of today's orders. Whether you're doing it for yourself or for the ones you love, Smoke RX is the fast, guaranteed answer. In as little as 1 week, you'll kick the habit for good or your money back. Call now to receive a free month's supply with your order.
To order risk-free, call 1-800-305-2704. That's 1-800-305-2704. Call 1-800-305-2704 now.
You know college football. You want interviews with the top college coaches in the country. You want analysis from the very best in the business, and you want it now. Sirius is now offering college sports radio with the Sirius College Coaches Show. 3 hours of the very best analysis for Saturday's game with Coach Terry Bowden and legendary college announcer Jack Arute.
The Sirius College Coaches Show, 9 a.m. to 12 noon Eastern, Saturdays on Sirius Sports Action 123.
Has someone offended you? I'm Mark Merrill with today's Family Minute. If a family member, friend, coworker, or even a boss has said or done something to upset you, what should you do? Tell other people? Well, no. You need to go to that person and gently let them know how they've hurt you. If they don't respond, bring along one or two other people and approach them again. In doing all this, be sure you're coming to them with clean hands, without any grudges of your own. When you work for unity in your relationships, you'll be amazed at the results. Remember, your family first.
The Family Minute with Mark Merrill is a production of Family First. To find some great resources for strengthening your family, go to FamilyMinute.net. That's FamilyMinute.net. Or call 1-800-956-8300. That's 1-800-956-8300.
average parent thinks they're prepared for a medical emergency. They know if their child has allergies or how to call 911. But the average parent doesn't know how to treat severe burns or what to do when a child stops breathing. You can't always prevent emergencies, but you can be better prepared. Call 1-888-ASK-HRSA for more information. That's toll-free, 1-888-ASK-HRSA. Brought to you by the Emergency Medical Services for Children.
Past the hour on my new Seiko watch that was given to me by my wife for my birthday next week. She's coming in tonight. I'm counting the minutes, Mark Riley. I'm Mark Maron. That is Mark Riley.
Hi.
This is Mornings Edition on Air America Radio. You can join us on the blog at morningsedition.com. And yes, Chris, the cat bed you sent me was initially used as a toilet, but now maybe they'll use it as a bed. I appreciate it. I felt bad this guy sends this nice, or woman, I'm not sure, sends me this nice cat bed, and I put it out, and the cat immediately just went to bed.
Went on it.
But now maybe it'll turn around. Hey, that's not important. We've got things to learn. I've got to go to the therapist today. Here's my dream diary from last night. I'm at the United Nations, and I'm a translator. President Bush is about to speak, and I have to translate his speech for the people in the Republic of New York. He speaks a bizarre dialect of English, so I may have to paraphrase here and there. He steps up to the podium, and I start writing down what he is actually saying. Mr. Secretary General, Mr. President, distinguished delegates, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for the honor of addressing this General Assembly. This is my house, so keep your feet off the furniture, you terrorist-appeasing surrender monkeys. The American people respect the idealism that gave life to this organization, but we haven't respected anything else about the UN for a long time, except maybe the money you pour into high-end restaurants and bars in Midtown. By the way, diplomats are still crummy tippers, always less than 10%. In this young century, our world needs a new definition of security. Me. Just start using the word security and Bush interchangeably. It's easy and fun. We know that dictators are quick to choose aggression, while free nations strive to resolve differences in peace. Since the U.S. is somewhere between a dictatorship and a free nation, I will choose aggression or peace depending on what is most politically convenient for me at the time. And if you don't like it, well, whining is your job, isn't it, you terrorist-appeasing surrender monkeys? We know that oppressive governments support terror while free governments fight the terrorists in their midst. Or you can start up a Department of Homeland Security and make people take their shoes off at the airport. Terrorists and their allies believe the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and the American Bill of Rights and every charter of liberty ever written are lies to be burned and destroyed and forgotten as a way to scare the people into buying my BS. They have been a big help. I can't deliver this. Keep up the good work, amigos. Despite this, freedom is finding a way in Iraq and Afghanistan, finding its way into cars that blow up. We must continue to show our commitment to democracies in those nations by having elections that are as crooked as ours will be. I'm sending Jeb over there just to make sure. The defeat of terror, the protection of human rights, the spread of prosperity, the advance of democracy, these causes, these ideals, call us to great work in the world. Each of us alone can only do so much. Can only do so much. Together, we can accomplish so much more. Of course, by us, I mean you, and by we, I mean me. So I'm going to leave now and do whatever I like. See you later, terrorist appeasing surrender monkeys. But not if I see you first. I woke up and my bed was filled with the box set of Star Wars DVDs. Wow. Okay, here we go. It's time to learn. Are you ready to learn, Mark?
I'm ready to learn.
You probably already know. You're just not telling me.
No, that's not true.
You know, I just realized that sometimes my peas, when I say peas, can I say fart a little bit? My peas. All right. Anyway, so now there's people out there going, I never noticed that before. And from here on out, they're like, oh, my God.
Yep.
This peas fart. All right. Here we go. Our guest is a fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, author of After the People Vote, A Guide to the Electoral College. John Fortier is here. Good morning, John.
Morning.
Good morning.
I'm very glad you're here because I'm dumb. I've tried to wrap my brain around this Electoral College thing. Initially, I was under the impression that it was something that the founders put into place so the senators who were the landowners would never let the country get into the hands of the dumb people. Is that true?
No, really, it was a compromise between our old system, which under the Articles of Confederation was very much dominated by the states, and moving to a new system, which was supposed to be much more of a national system. But it was something of a compromise. It takes the states into account, but is primarily about a national country and national representation.
Okay, and that means what?
Well, that means when you elect electors, each state has two electors for their senators, and then they have the number of electors based on how many reps they have in the House of Representatives.
Who are these guys, these electors? Do I know any of them?
They're unknown people. Sometimes they appear on the ballot, but most states they don't. And they're basically loyal party people who don't have much of a formal role other than to cast the vote that their state is telling them that they should cast.
So these guys who are unknown people, who are loyal party people, are the ones that kind of control who gets to be president.
Indirectly. I mean, basically it's based on the vote in the state, but ultimately they meet in December and they cast the votes, and if you get a majority of the Electoral College, 270, you have a majority, you win. If not, you have another complicated system where you might actually have Congress decide the election. We could actually have a tie in the Electoral College this time. It certainly happened once long ago, and we've got a close election. Maybe we'll have that happen this time.
Okay, let me see if I can do this another way, because I'm clearly mentally challenged. I've got a room full of people, and they represent a state. And I go, okay, how many people want this guy to be president? And 60 people raise their hands, okay? And they're Republicans. And then the 40 that want to be Democrats, they're Democrats. So that they lose, right? Okay, so you're saying that within these 60 of the Republicans who voted as a state, there's a few of those people that are these electorates, the electoral people, that are in charge of representing the state on an electoral level.
Yeah, almost all the states, what happens is whoever wins the popular vote gets all the electors.
Okay.
You get 55 electors if you win California by one vote. You get 3 electors in Delaware if you win Delaware by one vote. There are 2 states that make an exception, but basically, and Colorado wants to change their law, but basically you get all the votes if you win the state.
And why does this take precedence over the popular vote?
Well, we've never had a popular vote. We really don't have a single national election in the country. We have 51 elections. We have different states administering the elections. There's nobody in Washington who can run an election. There are different rules in different states. So each state has to kind of come to their own conclusion of how they want to hold the election and then elect these electors.
Now, you mentioned that a couple of states don't do it winner take all, and Colorado was talking about changing theirs. What specifically do they want to change to?
Yeah, the two that don't are Maine and Nebraska. And the Colorado wants to change to something of a proportional representation. If you win, they have 9 electoral votes. So if you were to win 55% of the vote, you'd get 5 electors, and the person who won the 44 would get the 4 electors. So instead of 9-0 by winning the state, you're really going 5-4.
Now, that would be a profound change if many other states decided to adopt that kind of proportionality, wouldn't it?
Yeah, if every state adopted that, you'd have something something closer to the popular vote, although the Electoral College tends to track the popular vote pretty closely anyway. But if they do it by themselves, which they're planning to do, it's something of unilateral disarmament. All the other states get to a winner-take-all system, and they're not very important. Most candidates are not going to say, well, we're going to go to Colorado and want to win 5-4 rather than get those 9 electors that they would get under the current system.
So should there be a nationalized election system?
I guess I think our Electoral College works pretty well. We had in 2000 the popular vote go the opposite way of the Electoral College, but that hadn't happened since 1888. And I think the big problem in 2000 was really with all of our election machinery and things that we're trying to fix, but it's a ways away before we can. So I think the Electoral College actually works reasonably well. There are problems with other systems. Imagine holding a national recount as opposed to one in Florida and examining every polling place across the country. So I think we're wise to say where we are, and we'd require a constitutional amendment to change it, and that's a tough road to hoe.
Well, thank you very much. I feel a little more educated, but still confused. But we did what we could in the time we had, John.
Appreciate it.
You take care. I know exactly how you feel. Am I stupid?
No.
All right.
When we come back, Iraq, Birth of a Nation, Rapture Watch, you on the phones, and Salon.com correspondent Philip Robertson as we roll on here on Air America Radio.
Planet Check. This is a The last 2 years' worth of research on global warming shows major disruption in the oceans, major disruption of wildlife species and their migrations.
That's Director of Global Warming and Energy Programs David Hamilton for the Sierra Club. Recently, a report from the White House said that global warming is caused by humans.
And still we have no acknowledgement from the administration that we need to act in any meaningful way. It is a crime against future generations.
We're having freaky weather. There's a
The Arctic ice mass is melting five times faster than the original models predicted it would 5 years ago.
We need to act soon, and we need to act decisively.
Get the facts online at sierraclub.org. That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at cliffbar.com.
Air America Radio News, I'm Mike Piazza. A second militant group is claiming to have killed two Italian women being held hostage in Iraq. The group says it will release a video of the beheading soon. Yesterday, another group claimed to kill the two women who went missing earlier this month. The brother of a British man being held hostage in Iraq is accusing the U.S. of sabotaging efforts to free him. The brother of Kenneth Bigley says the U.S. squashed a deal to free some Iraqi prisoners in exchange for sparing his brother's life. President Bush is welcoming the interim prime minister of Iraq to the White House today. It says Ayed Alawi's first official visit to the White House. The two are expected to discuss the security situation in Iraq and issue a joint statement. Forecasters say it's time for Florida to pay attention to Hurricane Jean. It says the storm will, with 100-mile-an-hour winds, could hit Sunday. In the meantime, they say Tropical Storm Ivan will begin hitting the Gulf Coast again today. I'm Mike Piazza, and you're listening to Air America Radio News.
Your team takes possession and races toward the end zone. The roar of the crowd is deafening, except to you. Because you are the team mascot.
Hey, guys.
And inside your big furry suit,
it's real hard to see out of this thing.
The game sounds just a little bit different.
Guys?
The NCAA on Sirius.
Oh.
Get in on the excitement. Go to Sirius.com for the full broadcast schedule.
This is Earth and Sky. Many of you have asked if it's a coincidence that the moon keeps a single face toward Earth.
And no, it's not thought to be just a coincidence. The constant pull of Earth's gravity has slowed down the spinning moon, so now it's in what's called synchronous rotation. In other words, the moon spins once for each of its orbits around Earth. And that's why the moon always keeps a single face turned our way.
Billions of years ago, the moon was spinning faster than it does today, and it was also much closer to Earth. But the Earth's gravity put the brakes on the moon and gradually increased its distance. This happened because Earth pulls one side of the moon more strongly than the other side, and the moon does the same to Earth. Both worlds attempt to stretch each other from the shape of a sphere into more of an egg shape. We see this tidal effect strongly in ocean tides. But the Earth and Moon also raise tides of solid ground on each other.
Because their tidal bulges don't line up exactly between the center of Earth and the Moon, the rotation rates of both worlds have slowed down over time. Now the Moon is locked with one face perpetually turned toward Earth, and the Moon is getting farther away from the Earth at about a foot or 30 centimeters per year.
For more about this topic, come to earthsky.org. With thanks to the National Science Foundation, we're Block and Bird for Earth and Sky.
Crazy, man. I'm going crazy. It's one of those days, man. I started out full of juice. I was full of juice.
We're all right, man. We're all right.
No, I got juice, and I'm ready. I'm going good. I'm doing the thinking.
There you go.
I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Morning Sedition. This is Air America Radio.
You know what the problem is?
What?
It would take a week to do the Electoral College so that we would all clearly understand what the politics of it are. Because it is political.
Yeah, obviously it's political and it's state to state and it's this and that, you grow up thinking a certain, like, hey, I'm going to vote, man. It's my right to vote. And then you realize that there is all these filters and there's all these, different angles and there's all this, the way the states are divvied up, and it's disturbing. You know what I mean? There's some part of me that would like it to be that simple. Who wants Bush? Raise your hand.
Yeah, right.
All right, hold on. We're trying to count. Okay.
Okay.
All right, good. We got it. What'd you get? Yeah, me too. All right, who wants Carrie? Raise your hand. You know, that's, you know.
All right. Anyways, let's talk about another country. Since the handover of power, we're exploring various issues and opportunities the Iraqis and Americans will face. This is Iraq, Birth of a Nation, Day 86. Leaders of Iraq. Yeah, I know, I know. So we had a little mix-up yesterday. I want to clear it up now. Your officials wanted to release a prisoner named Rehab Taha, better known as Dr. Germ, because of her biological weapons research. Then a couple of hours later, our officials stepped in and said, no way, Dr. Germ stays in the pokey. Hey, remember when we made all those airstrikes, we drove our tanks through Baghdad and arrested Saddam and all that? Sure you do. Uh-huh. So after we did all that, who do you think is going to make the important decisions around here? You? No. Your elected officials? No. Halliburton? Bingo. Did you really think we were going to let someone called Dr. Germ just walk? With all the kidnappings and car bombings and beheadings going on, you don't really have the proper perspective to make those kind of decisions. But the U.S., on the other hand, 8,000 miles from danger, has a much clearer view of the big picture. Right now, the only thing you need to worry about releasing is oil. And don't worry about Dr. Germ. We'll let her go when she's willing to share some of her cool germ secrets with us. Until then, good luck and God bless. This is Day 86 of Iraq. Birth of a Nation. Live free or die. You know, sometimes you do that bit, and in the face of the news, it seems sort of trivializing, because there is some heinous news coming out of Iraq. We've heard, you know, nothing but disaster stories. Clearly, it's become a powerful issue in the campaign. Finally,
Johnson. Well, you know, that's the thing that's kind of irritating, Mark. It is really a disaster. Unless you consume a nonstop diet of George W. Bush. You know, if this was a court, all right, a criminal court in the United States, and here's, you know, John Kerry and all these people on one side saying the war is a disaster, and you got George W. Bush on the other side saying, oh, no, things are going well, we're on the road to democracy. The judge would say, wait a minute, one of the two of you's lying. One of the two.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because the stories are now diametric opposites.
And then that dude, that caller yesterday who called us, who was in Vietnam, and he was talking to us about guerrilla warfare, you know, looks like and how it works. And he was just like, he really changed my mind about how, you know, that it's a lot like Vietnam in the sense that you're dealing with, you know, tribal loyalties and tribal warfare and a type of guerrilla warfare that, you know, is really strategically almost identical to what was going on in Vietnam.
And the interesting thing is that the guest we're about to talk to says exactly the same thing that Randall said. I mean, he didn't use the Vietnam analogy, but he talks about how the tribes in Iraq look at the American invasion. And Americans have no clue what's going through the minds of Iraqis in terms of what happens when somebody's an innocent person's life is lost to a U.S. missile or a grenade or something like that.
Yeah.
And how they have to avenge that.
Yeah, and also what exactly the insurgency looks like on the on identity level. You know, who are they really? I mean, we hear a lot of talk, but I rarely see it in the mainstream media. Let's talk to him right now. The article in Ceylon, he's a Ceylon correspondent, it's called Hell. It's definitely a great read.
Yeah,
he was inside the Imam Ali Shrine in Najaf for 3 days in August during the standoff between U.S. troops and Iraqi insurgents. He just left Iraq. He's on the phone from Amsterdam. Good morning, Philip Robertson. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good morning.
Good. So what, I can't even imagine, you know, what was it like being in that shrine? I can't even imagine it.
The shrine was one of the most interesting places I've ever been. And it's, the shrine, because it was functioning as a refuge, was very calm for the most part. There were probably anywhere between about 600 and 2,500 people in the shrine during the siege.
Oh, wow. So, I mean, listen to me. I'm like, you know, wow. So what, was there a point where did you think that you were really going to, you know, get hit, that you weren't going to live through it?
The worst part was actually crossing the siege lines. We had to cross American lines, then a no man's land, and then the Mahdi army lines. And we were fired on. When we went through the American lines, we were not fired on, but we crossed into this no man's land, and just as we made contact with the Mahdi army fighters, snipers opened up on us, and that was really disturbing.
So now what was your impression of the American troops? It's hard for me to picture being on the other side of their fire. Did you feel more sympathy toward the insurgents' cause, or how did you, where are you with that?
Well, there was an enormous amount of firepower being used on Najaf when I was there. They were using everything they had in their arsenal. There were rockets coming down from helicopters. They were using artillery. They were using snipers, the whole deal. It was like Indians with bows and arrows against rifles. The Mahdi Army guys didn't really have a chance, and they were getting destroyed. There was high casualties and terrible injuries. That's what we saw when we were in the shrine.
Philip, there's a part of your article that really is chilling. And when it speaks about the infiltration of the Iraqi police by insurgents. In fact, you cite a situation where the Mahdi Army in Sadr City had a number of police officers in its ranks. And in one event that took place at a demonstration in Baghdad at the time of the siege, the Iraqi police helped Sadr officials address a crowd of supporters of Muqtada al-Sadr outside the Green Zone.
I've seen a lot in Iraq, but I didn't expect that. I didn't know that the police would be so open about their affiliation with the Mahdi Army. And we wanted to try to figure out whether the police were doing that to sort of, as an insurance policy so the Mahdi Army wouldn't attack them, or whether it was genuine sympathy. I think it was the latter. I think it was genuine sympathy.
Wow. So we're going to take a break. We want, when we come back, we talked to Borzu Dargahi this morning, and he painted a picture of Iraq right now, right in Baghdad, that's pretty chilling. We want to play that for you and get some reaction about what's going on there now, okay?
Sure.
Okay, we'll be back in a second on Air America Radio.
We wanted to do this really cool promo for Stephen Lynch, comedian, songwriter, uber genius, and play a little of his music for you. But unfortunately, this is all we can give you without offending somebody. So if you'd like to hear the uncensored version, you can catch him September 28th as he debuts his new DVD live at the El Rey, live in our studios. Stephen Lynch, offensively on Sirius Raw Dog 147. Comedy. Uncensored.
Speak out on Sirius.
Get serious about your vote.
Hi, this is Joanne from Poughkeepsie, New York. I'm voting for John Kerry. And whoever you're going to vote for, that's okay. We can still be friends, but please vote in the upcoming November election.
I'm Larry from New York City, and I am going with George W. Bush in 04. Thanks very much.
This is Rich. Tell the two candidates that are running for president, will you stop beating each other up? Just start talking about some jobs. Will you? Half the people I know are unemployed. The economy stinks. Get the word out that we need some jobs. Fix the economy, would you? Tell them.
Hi, this is Pat from Oklahoma. On election day, I'm going to go out and I'm going to cast my vote for George Bush. And if you don't like it, then you better get off your butt, get down to the polls, and cast your vote for the other guy.
Tell us why this presidential election is important to you.
Call 1-877-33-SIRIUS and press 4.
To speak out on Sirius. Everyone knows what happens when we join together. We get stronger. That's why community groups like the PTA, clubs, and even faith groups can do so much for our community, especially fighting to keep kids away from drugs. But do you know there's a way to make community groups even stronger? It's called a community coalition. A community coalition helps local groups get together and fight to keep kids away from drugs. Find out how your group can get involved at helpyourcommunity.org, because you get more when you get together. Brought to you by the Office of National Drug Control Policy and the Ad Council.
I started hearing voices telling me, "You're dying, you're dying." I couldn't make them stop. My heart kept speeding up and slowing down. Now I feel paranoid all the time, and I can't tell what is real and what isn't. I'm on medication, but it doesn't help. Sometimes I believe I'm already dead and in hell.
Unfortunately, this 19-year-old learned that happiness and a heightened sense of touch aren't the only side effects of ecstasy. Leave ecstasy alone. To learn how or to read other real-life ecstasy tragedies, visit drugfreeamerica.org.
The Consultant Pharmacist is your own personal health care consultant. You'll find them in nursing homes, other long-term care settings, and in your community, anywhere there's a need for high-level medication management. But Consultant Pharmacy is more than just managing medications. It's about helping people live better and longer lives. This message brought to you by the American Society of Consultant Pharmacists.
Forty 3 past the hour. Mark Maron here on Morning's Edition with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Seems to be a healthy conversation about the Electoral College starting to unfold on the blog. If you want to check in with that, and also you might want to listen because we are talking to Philip Robertson, who is a Salon correspondent. His article "Hell" is in the current issue of Salon Online. If you want to check that out, he spent time with the Iraqi insurgents at the Imam Ali Shrine in Najaf for 3 days. Philip, we talked to Borzu Dargahi this morning, and I just want to play this bite for you because, you know, it sounds like Iraq is just a complete disaster zone. Hold on, here we go.
You know, I got to tell you, it's really frightening, and it's very scary. Today I had to go do something at a register, some kind of official thing, and this guy wrote down my name, and he was writing down my nationality and my hotel, and I'm like, you know what? I don't want you to write down all that information. Can you just put a different hotel? Because I don't know where this is going to fall into. And the guy just starts laughing. I'm like, I'm serious. I don't want to end up on Al Jazeera, you know, getting my throat slit. And, you know, like, right, you know, it's just the most mundane things. You know, my hard drive crashed. And so there's a lot of talented Iraqi people who could fix it. And I'm trying to get it fixed and going to, like, computer shops and stuff. I'm terrified, you know. I'm terrified that, you know, someone's going to overhear my American accent and, you know, give word to someone else, and the next thing you know, I'm going to get kidnapped. And all I'm doing is out here trying to get my computer fixed.
Now, obviously, you built up some trust with these guys that are so frightening to so many of us and so many people. You know, I mean, who are they? You know, what are their tactics, and what is your sense of where Iraq is right now?
I believe that you know, that Iraq is in a pretty desperate situation right now. What's happening is that a lot of the remnants of the former government, particularly the security agencies, are either joining or are starting to organize parts of the resistance, and that means that they're very much interested in the activities of foreigners.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these guys think that most foreign journalists are spies. We're under a lot of surveillance, and most of us have received threats at one point or another.
Yeah.
The longer you stay in Baghdad, the worse it gets, because they are able to accumulate more information about you. In the case of the Mahdi Army, I know that there's one individual who runs a security apparatus within the organization in Sadr City who's been harassing and beating foreign journalists. It's a desperate situation. It's very difficult to work because we don't know when we're going to be picked up and detained.
Mm. Philip, how easy is it, and your piece talks about this, how easy is it for Iraqis now to procure weapons as the American occupation has gone forward and now, of course, through the transition to Iraqi rule?
Iraq is awash with weapons. It's saturated with every conceivable kind of weapon, not just small arms like rifles, but rocket launchers. And lately, I've been seeing something called a Strela anti-aircraft missile, which is a heat-seeking missile that will take down a U.S. helicopter. So these things do not cost a lot of money. They're usually in the hundreds of dollars range.
Hundreds of dollars?
Hundreds of dollars. Anywhere from $150 to $250 will get you a rocket launcher.
So in your article...
These things are common, yeah.
Wow. In your article, you talk about the insurgents as a hodgepodge of extremists, imams, tribal sheikhs, former Iraqi government officials, and al-Qaeda types. Now, what is it, now, when they took over a holy shrine, are there arguments within the insurgency in terms of control and decision-making?
There are deep divisions. When I was describing the hodgepodge of extremist imams, I'm talking more about the Sunni insurgency, and the difference between the Sunni and the Shia is very, very great. And I don't have a great handle on the Sunni story because they have a long history of kidnapping.
Okay.
So it's a tough story to get. But the Shia, when they took over the shrine, most of that was political and religious in nature. That was not much guided by you know, former government people. That has a much different character, and they actually feel, as a reporter, they feel much more reasonable, and you can talk to them.
So the religious extremists are less frightening than the ex-Baathists.
Yes, actually, the Baathists make the Muqtada Sadr people look like moderates. That's my feeling.
Wow, that's really interesting. Now, when you were hanging out with these people, you developed relationships. How did they treat you?
They treated me very well. And the reason that happened was that
They pretty much extended an Arab welcome to me. I was given the protection of a sheikh. They knew me. They'd known me for months. I've been in and out of the office writing stories about them. And they didn't trust me 100%, but they did sort of protect me. And there was one sheikh there who was very kind to journalists. He allowed us to work, and he extended his welcome. So I made use of that all the time, and I wasn't the only one.
How much of this conflict, if we're going to get right down to the core of the insurgency and the war that's going on there, how much of it is really tribal?
I think Iraq is only a modern country on the face of it. It's essentially a tribal culture. It's not like Afghanistan, but in this part of the world, family is the center of the universe. Your brothers, your cousins, that's basically how you start trusting people. If your brother brings somebody to you, you know you can trust that person because your brother wouldn't have brought him to you. It's very much works that way. And the whole idea of honor, it's so potent. And once people feel dishonored, they'll do anything.
Now, is there a quick last question? Is there like a finite number of tribes that seem to dominate? Is it like under 10?
There's some really, really big tribes. The Dulaimi tribe is a huge tribe, and they're in Fallujah. And there are very, very large tribes.
Yeah, okay.
And there's a sort of a congress of them that meets periodically.
Secretly?
No, it's pretty open.
That's
pretty
interesting. Open. We don't hear about that stuff here. I really appreciate it. We got to go, but it was certainly great talking to you, and I'm definitely going to read some more of your stuff, Philip Robertson.
Appreciate it, Philip.
Thank you very much.
Okay, bye-bye. Interesting. See, that's something you never hear about, you know, and I want to try and do some more research on that, Mark Riley, because I've been saying this tribal thing for a long time, but I want to educate myself a little more. Maybe we can have a conversation about that in the next week or two, because it's my belief that underneath all this stuff is something that goes back thousands of years that really isn't talked about.
Well, that's what Philip talks about in the book, in the article on Salon.com. And there is, I read something recently about these meetings of the different, I guess they're tribal councils, for want of a better term, and that they happen pretty frequently, and that people really do pay attention to edicts that come from these tribal councils.
Oh, this is interesting stuff. We'll be back in a second on Air America Radio. Oh, I'm sorry, I was blogging. Hey, check us out on morningsedition.com where you can blog too.
This is a Window Bob Report. I'm Sarah Turner. According to the Progressive Government Institute, Elaine Chao is the most conservative Secretary of Labor in the last half century. Ms. Chao has gone on record against the UN, overtime pay, and ergonomic regulations. She also canceled OSHA health and safety training grants to 19 nonprofit organizations and halted the publication of monthly mass layoff reports.
This Stab Bob Report brought to you by the Communications Workers of America, the Union for the Information Age.
Stop whining. That's what head of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, Tom Donahue, told workers who just lost their high-tech jobs to overseas outsourcing. Analysts say millions of more jobs could be lost in the next few years. That's why we, the Communications Workers of America, are doing something about it. We're fighting to end tax breaks to ship our jobs overseas. We're helping tech workers organize. Learn more at techsunite.org, because America's future is on the line. A message from the Communications Workers of America.
Your team takes possession and races toward the end zone. The roar of the crowd is deafening. Except to you. Because you are the team mascot.
Hey, guys.
And inside your big furry suit.
It's real hard to see out of this thing.
The game sounds just a little bit different.
Guys.
The NCAA on Sirius. Get in on the excitement. Go to Sirius.com for the full broadcast schedule.
My dad can throw a baseball 100 million feet. You know, well, my dad can throw a football 1,000 bazillion feet. That's twice as far. So, my dad can hold his breath underwater for 5 minutes. That's nothing. My dad can make a 360 two-handed backward slam dunk with his eyes closed. Yeah. Well, my dad, he can make quarters come out of his nose. Big deal. My dad, he eat a whole jalapeno pepper in one bite. Get out. Yep, that's impossible. He'd explode. Boom!
Kids who spend time with their fathers are less likely to get in trouble or fail in school. Be there for your kids. Give them someone to brag about. Remember, It takes a man to be a dad.
My dad comes out a soda can with his head.
No way.
Uh-huh. I saw him do it.
Cool.
Then we took him to the hospital.
Call 1-800-790-DADS for more information. A public service message from the National Fatherhood Initiative and the Ad Council.
Hey, kid, are you in the car with your parents right now? Have they ever asked you about the drug ecstasy? Probably not, right? They still think parties are all about getting drunk. Or that drugs are something only bad kids would do. Hey, they never ask. They'll never know the E is used by good kids, just like you. They'll never know about those bottles in your bedroom that look like vitamins or that glow stick jewelry. They'll never know that E can cause seizures, strokes, heart attacks, or death. Even the first time you use it. Yeah, you sure got them fooled, all right.
Ask your kids about E right now. Then go to AskYourKidsAboutE.com.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi. A morning submission. That's very appropriate music for what we're about to get into.
Oh, yeah.
The Bible's book of Revelation portends the end of days and the second coming of the Christian Messiah, one of our president's favorite stories. Though no one knows when the end times will come, there are signs that will appear to men. Here on Morning Sedition, we won't let you be caught off guard by the end of the world. That's why we present this week's Rapture Watch with MILF Cardinal Milfington of the recently disgraced Diocese of Great Bend, Kansas. Your Grace?
Take heed, sayers of nay, gravers of images, fornicators, cannibals, midgets, dwarves who pose as midgets, and regular viewers of the award-winning CBS News magazine, 60 Minutes. Your day is approaching. In fact, the end is so near, I'm going to use the word nigh. Last week, I told you about satanic robots. This week, before that, the evil seed of space aliens. And before that, I somehow unlocked the demonic connection between a plague of locusts and Garden Burger meatless riblets. Simply delicious with only 6 carbs, 6 grams of fat, and 6 grams of sugar per serving. Garden Burger meatless riblets, a devilish taste treat in every bite. But now comes an even bigger sign that history has entered the end times. Language. Yes, according to CNN, or Cable's nabob of negativity, deaf children in Nicaragua have developed their own sign language without any type of formal instruction. Oh, Lordy! This is truly a sign of the rapture. How can children be taught the values of guilt and self-hate without the guiding hand of a skilled clergyman? And what about the perils of verb-subject agreement, gerund phrases, and misplaced modifiers? Why, Strunk and White would be rolling over in their graves right now if they weren't already in purgatory, sitting nude upon razor-sharp pyramid structures with ants crawling on their groins as punishment for watching somebody's sister undress or something. For it was prophesied in Revelation 54:40 or fight. And the armies of darkness did spake the tongue of their beast idol, Scooby-Doo. And they did mocketh our Lord, replacing the first letter of every commandment with a canine-like R. And they did rape the promised land of snacks. And all the children of God did cry, Ruh-roh! Translation, soon people all over the world will be communicating in this exclusive language of supernatural beast worship. Ruh-roh indeed! Keep on fornicating, fornicators, and we'll keep the light on for you. Rin-rel! Ray-rod, rav-rusy-ron-us-raw! Ris-ras-ran-rapture-rot-ron-roiding-redition! Ruby-dooby-doo!
Thank you, Cardinal. You all right?
All right. I eat a bad corn muffin this morning.
That's the corn muffin talking?
Yes. Yes, sir.
Oh, my God.
Anything else you want to ask?
No, man. I'm cool.
All right.
See you later, buddy.
Thanks. See you next week.
What's your hat going out the door? What do we got coming up, Riley?
Well, we got a few things coming up. The presidential daily briefing, you on the telephones, comic book artist Art Spiegelman, the liberal agenda, and much, much more. All for you here on Air America Radio.
A pop quiz for parents with third grade teacher Mr. Bonner.
Today's quiz will test your general knowledge. 1. Name one Hollywood director. 2. Name one actor from a TV sitcom. 3. Name one comedian. 4. Name one game show host. 5. Name one professional athlete. 6. Name one reality TV show. And one more question worth 100 points. Name one teacher you've met visiting your kid's school.
Know what really matters. Know about your kid's school. And know about your kid. Find out 100 ways to know more, do more. Visit PTA.org or call 800-307-4-PTA. A message from the Ad Council and the National PTA.
Uncensored.
Uncensored.
Uncut.
Uncut.
Satellite Fresh.
Satellite Fresh.
Sirius, it's on.
Air America Radio News, I'm Mike Piazza. Two separate militant groups are claiming responsibility for the execution of two Italian women taken hostage in Iraq. Neither claim could be immediately verified. The new posting about the purported beheadings of Simona Pari and Simona Toretta appeared on a little-known website and was signed by a group calling itself the Supporters of al-Zawahiri. That group's name refers to Ayman al-Zawahiri, a deputy of the al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden. Relatives of the British hostage Kenneth Bigley being held in Iraq are pleading with his captors for his release. British officials say they won't negotiate. The British Foreign Secretary says the government can't get into a situation of bargaining with terrorists. Two American hostages have already been beheaded. Two militant groups take responsibility for killing two Italian women hostages. U.S. troops' deaths continue to mount, and the debate over U.S. involvement in Iraq rages in this country. Mark Riley and Mark Maron spoke to Borzu Garawi, a freelance journalist and regular contributor to Morning Sedition, about life in Baghdad.
I'm terrified, you know. I'm terrified that, you know, someone's going to overhear my American accent and, you know, give word to someone else, and the next thing you know, I'm going to get kidnapped. And all I'm doing is out here trying to get my computer fixed. I don't want to end up on Al Jazeera, you know, getting my throat slit.
John Kerry taking on the president with some direct hits on the president's stance on Iraq and the spread of terrorism. Speaking to the Associated Press, Kerry said the president is living in a make-believe world by minimizing all that's gone wrong in Iraq. Kerry was pointing to Bush's comment at the Pennsylvania campaign stop that the insurgents number just a handful. He calls that a Bush blunder. Says Kerry, Bush is unwilling to tell the American people the truth. Meantime, a bad chest cold and a raspy voice have forced the Democrats to cancel plans to campaign today in Ohio and Iowa. Aides are hoping the rest on top of a planned weekend at home in Boston will help Kerry recover his voice in time for the first campaign debate a week from tonight. Trucks dumped scores of bodies into a mass grave in the flood-ravaged city of Gonaives, Haiti. The city remains littered with corpses, as officials said the death toll from Tropical Storm Jean rose to more than 1,070 and could double again. 1,013 bodies were recovered in Gonaives alone, according to Dufort Delorge, a spokesman for the government's civil protection agency. He said the number of people missing in the floods rose to 1,250. Republican lawmakers predicting a swift passage of an extension of free popular middle-class tax cuts. The extension's already approved by the House and Senate negotiators. The measure keeps the child tax credit at $1,000. It also continues an expanded 10% tax rate that lowers tax bills for virtually all taxpayers. And it continues to offer married couples tax savings. Mourning has broken, this time in London, for Yousef Islam. The singer formerly known as Cat Stevens landed back in London after American officials deported him because of suspicions that he's associated with potential terrorists. Mike Piazza, Air America Radio.
Your team takes possession and races toward the end zone. The roar of the crowd is deafening. Except to you. Because you are the team mascot.
Hey, guys.
And inside your big furry suit,
it's real hard to see out of this thing.
The game sounds just a little bit different.
Guys?
The NCAA on Sirius.
Oh.
Get in on the excitement. Go to Sirius.com for the full broadcast schedule.
This is Earth and Sky. The venom of a poisonous snake is designed to kill its prey.
But a bite can be a lot less lethal when it's treated with an injection of antivenin.
Antivenin is a serum that neutralizes a snake's poison. Most antivenins are too chemically complex to be synthesized in a laboratory. Instead, scientists expose an animal, such as a horse, to small amounts of snake venom. This causes its immune system to create antibodies, cells that attack the venom. The scientists remove some of the animal's blood and separate out the protective antibodies.
Bill Haast is director of the Miami Serpentarium. He produces snake venom for life-saving antivenins by milking poisonous snakes, forcing them to release their venom into a beaker. In 55 years, he says he's handled 3 million poisonous snakes. But snake bites happen, so years ago, Haast began trying to build his own immunity.
I started off in 1948 taking minute injections of Cobrivan and slowly increased it until I was taking a full lethal dose, and I still do. As a matter of fact, I had an injection this morning.
Haast has been bitten 179 times so far. He says the injections have probably saved his life.
Our thanks to the Camille and Henry Dreyfus Foundation, a private foundation dedicated to advancing research and education in the chemical sciences. We're Block and Bird for Earth and Sky.
Hello?
Hi, Bill? This is George Dewey from up the street.
Oh, hey, George. How you doing?
Good, good. Say, I noticed you've been walking to work these days instead of driving. And I don't quite know how to say this, but...
But what?
But your butt. Your buttocks. Your butt. I think I found your butt on my front lawn. Have you recently lost it?
As a matter of fact, I have, George. It's about time someone noticed.
Well, it was kind of hard to miss, if you know what I mean. Anyways, would you like it back?
Would I like it back? No, not really.
So it's okay if I throw it out?
Sure, that's fine. Take it easy, George.
Small step number 8. Walk instead of driving whenever you can. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to help you become a healthier, well, you. Get started at www.smallstep.gov and take a small step to get healthy.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
And it's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition. That's right. Good morning. Good morning, philosopher kings and queens. Good morning, lizard people. Good morning, desert dwellers. That's right. We're piping into Phoenix, 1010 AM KXXT in Phoenix, Arizona, where it is 194 degrees. My brother lives in Phoenix. How are you, Craig? Hope everything's well. If you're listening to us in Phoenix, tell me if you're listening to us right now in real time, because of the way the information trickles down from the three or four people at the top that are sometimes, I don't know, it's 8 o'clock here, which would mean it's what, 6 o'clock in Phoenix, or sometimes
I think it's six.
Sometimes it's 3 hours because they don't honor daylight savings time.
They didn't honor Martin Luther King for a long time either.
Is there a theme there?
Yeah.
There's some fear.
Avoidance of honoring.
Of darkness and blackness.
That's right.
I don't know what that means, but if you're hearing us now in real time, tell me. You write us an email right now. It's at morningsedition.com or sedition@airamericaradio.com.
Yes.
Just so I know, because I can't seem to get the information. Now, I love Phoenix myself. I spent a lot of time there. My ex-wife is from there. I had family there. And I'm a big desert fan. There's something about dry heat and the desert. My brother, they used to live like out on the fringes of Phoenix, way out there. And there's something about the quiet of the desert and the intense heat at all times with no moisture whatsoever, where you walk outside and you're like, oh, my God, I'm dehydrated.
It's a perpetual sauna.
Yeah. Well, no, because you don't even sweat. It's so dry that as the moisture leaves your pores, it just dissipates into the air and you don't even feel yourself losing liquid.
Wow.
It's cool. Back in the days when I smoked reefer, man, I used to love to go walk around the desert because just being high on top of being hot, great combination. I like being high and hot in Florida, too. You can being high and hot, like, I'll tell you honestly, just being really hot sometimes makes me feel high.
Now, I got to ask you, in places like Phoenix, those fringe areas are getting populated pretty quick, aren't they?
Yes,
I mean, they're being developed, that whole ring of suburbs around
here. Yeah, there's all these strange, like, sort of, like, middle-class settlements everywhere, these weird gated communities. It's like Israel. There's people out on the fringes of the desert that just, you know, build houses that look pretty much identical except for your own choice of garage and third room.
They built them all over America.
You can have your own style house. It's exactly like the other ones, but you can have this roof on it or this garage or, you know, this mix and match thing. But, it is spreading. It's a very spread out. It's hard to figure out where the center is with those kind of cities, you know?
Yeah. Well, here on the East Coast, they do what have come to be called McMansions,
mm-hmm.
where people get a property. They may have a house on it already, but they don't like the house. So they tear down the house, and they build these ugly mansions, all of whom have the same stained glass, the same kind of like angular architecture on the outside.
No integrity, no authenticity.
No real authenticity.
No history.
No. I mean, I don't know what these places are going to look like 100 years. Maybe 100 years from now they'll be revered and everybody will like
them.
They love colonials.
Right, they'll be saying in a different tone. Back when these were built, people didn't know better and they actually called them McMansions. Now we realize they are the most brilliant architectural breakthrough. A sort of deconstructive, disposable ideology about how architecture works. Anyways.
Have you ever worked as a tour guide?
A tour guide, no, but I can write a speculative paper. I'm working on my graduate thesis.
Oh, okay.
It's on deconstructing the ideas of the matrix of the natural legacy of the compounds involved in creating rock.
Ooh.
I don't know, man. That was retarded. Ridiculous. Hey, so anyways, Puerto Gas zips right through the Senate
No KY jokes.
Okay. I was going there, man.
I know you were. Vote was 77-17.
And then we were delivered the turd. There we go.
Yes, there he is. Florida Congressman Porter Goss. Confirmed by the Senate.
And can I retract that? I'm sorry.
What?
No, I don't want to be a poo joke guy. I'm sorry. I'm retracting the poo joke. Okay. All right, maybe Amy Goodman should do this. Go ahead. You go. Right, would that be all right with you if Amy Goodman was sitting here?
No.
Thank you. All right, so let's do it. I didn't mean to interrupt the real news. Let's talk about the issues.
Well, I mean, all of the opponents of Porter Goss, of course, in the Senate came from the Democrats. No Republicans crossed lines. This was pretty much expected, though. I mean, the Senate was kind of put between a rock and a hard place, and Bush knew this when he appointed Porter Goss.
Right.
Or he nominated Porter Goss. If the Democrats had come together around opposing him, and had managed to make the vote close or maybe even defeated his nomination, then Bush would have jumped up and said that the Democrats are being soft on national security. They're thwarting, you know, his efforts to keep America safe. Rather than do that, the Democrats essentially gave Porter Goss a free ride through the Senate. That's all it is.
Because they figure if Kerry gets in, he's going to, you know, pull the guy out anyways.
On November 3rd.
Right, exactly.
Promptly, yeah. And
I'm sorry, when Kerry gets in, they know he's going to pull him out. Let me rephrase that in a more confident, sort of proactive way.
Did you see that Michael Moore? Well, that's a whole other discussion.
What?
The whole thing about Michael Moore, I saw it on the blog, I think, telling Kerry supporters, like, buck up.
Oh, yeah, I read that.
It's going to be all right.
I read that, yeah.
We're going to
win.
You know,
yeah, this happens. Polls, you know, don't believe the polls. Don't, you know what I mean? Just, you know, just take it easy. You don't have to freak out.
Yeah.
Everything's fine.
Yeah. Now, I mean, at this point, I don't know whether Porter Goss is there in part because Bush figures he's safe. He won't make any waves about reforms in the intelligence community. Before the election. Remember, Porter Goss just got confirmed by the Senate to head an agency that George W. Bush said was guessing about the future of Iraq.
Well, from the intelligence estimate, you know, that he, you know, consigned, that he wanted,
yep.
You know, George W. Bush said he got this information in July, which, you know, blatantly says that, you know, Iraq's, you know,
in turmoil.
It's chaos. It's going to hell in a handbasket. We're losing, you know, the best, you know, the most desperate situation and quite possibly the end game of what's happening now is that there's going to be a civil war and that, you know, the Bush administration is just completely avoiding this. I forgot what I was talking about. They basically discredited the intelligence that they had.
Yeah, this is the collected intelligence. The National Intelligence Estimate is the collected intelligence of all the agencies in government that deal with SANE.
And he dismissed it as saying it was guesswork. Had a brain skid there, which is only going to, you know, piss off the intelligence, you know, group.
Yeah. And like, why bother, you know, even gathering this intelligence if the president is not going to take it seriously? Now, there is a risk involved with this for him. Remember the presidential daily briefing of August 6, 2001?
Yes.
Something else he ignored.
Right.
All right? Something else he didn't really take seriously. We all know what happened there. And, you know, in this situation, to ignore what Iraq is going to turn into, it means that you're really ignoring the cost in American lives of the war that you started.
In order to get votes.
Yep, in order to get votes. A very troubling piece in American Prospect Online by Matthew Iglesias that talks about that. It's called Dirty Tactics. George W. Bush is making Iraq more dangerous for our troops because doing otherwise might hurt his campaign. Think about that.
And also it turns out that, you know, the CIA that Portugas is, you know, assuming leadership of, you know, who knows whether they're actually going to make a national intelligence director. That no one knows that.
Nobody knows that yet.
But also that I didn't realize that the CIA was so understaffed. I mean, you know, it's unbelievable that, you know, they have, where is it right here? They only have 1,000 agents out in the world fighting terrorism. 1,000 agents. There's more FBI agents in New York alone.
Yeah.
Isn't that mind-blowing?
Yeah, it is mind-blowing. And human intelligence, which is what the CIA calls it, HUMINT. I guess they have acronyms for just about everything. You know, how do you manage, how do you think you're going to gather intelligence? How do you think you're going to get behind the veils of these insurgents and the rest of these people if you don't have the human intelligence? You can't do this with computers. You can't figure out what's in Zakawi's mind by pressing a button somewhere. You have to have people on the ground. Look at what's going on with the insurgents in terms of infiltrating the Iraqi police force.
Yeah.
That's their equivalent of human intelligence. Well, if the CIA doesn't have enough people, that means they don't have enough human intelligence. They're not trafficking in enough human intelligence. And it means that American lives end up being at risk.
Isn't that unbelievable? It's just unbelievable. 1,000. Just 1,000 agents. I mean, they've got some serious recruitment to do. They have to redefine and, you know, and restructure how this is going to work. They need a lot more people.
Goss is saying on a scale of 10, he's talking about human intelligence, we're about 3.
Unbelievable. And this is 3 years after 9/11. It's unbelievable how little this administration has done. Hey, if you want to secretly call us and you're a CIA agent, I'd like to talk to you. Or you can, anyone can call us. What are you thinking? 866-303-2270 is our number. Give us a call. We'll put you on the line here on Air America at 16 past the hour. Talk to you in a second.
Give us a call at 866-303-2270, or you can check us out at morningsedition.com.
To succeed in today's economy, it's more important than ever to get a college education. The gap in earnings between workers with a college degree and those without one is higher than ever before. But here's a reality check. Whether a student attends college largely depends on the income of his or her family. Nearly 90% of students from families in the top quarter of the income spectrum attend college. But less than 60% of those from the bottom quarter do. The gap is even worse at the nation's most selective colleges, the schools that our future leaders attend. In the nation's top colleges, you're 25 times as likely to run into a rich student than a poor student. That's not the way it should be in the land of opportunity. At the Century Foundation, we have ideas for enabling everyone to have a chance to attend college. When we know the facts, we can find real solutions. Get informed. Visit the Century Foundation online at www.centuryfoundation.org. That's www.centuryfoundation.org.
We wanted to do this really cool promo for Stephen Lynch, comedian, songwriter, uber genius, and play a little of his music for you. But unfortunately, this is all we can give you without offending somebody. So if you'd like to hear the uncensored version, you can catch him September 28th as he debuts his new DVD live at the El Rey, live in our studios. Stephen Lynch, offensively on Sirius Raw Dog 147. Comedy Uncensored.
Has someone offended you? I'm Mark Merrill with today's Family Minute. If a family member, friend, coworker, or even a boss has said or done something to upset you, what should you do? Tell other people? Well, no. You need to go to that person and gently let them know how they've hurt you. If they don't respond, bring along one or two other people and approach them again. In doing all this, be sure you're coming to them with clean hands, without any grudges of your own. When you work for unity in your relationships, you'll be amazed at the results. Remember, your family first.
The Family Minute with Mark Merrill is a production of Family First. To find some great resources for strengthening your family, go to FamilyMinute.net. That's FamilyMinute.net or call 1-800-956-8300. That's 1-800-956-8300.
Research shows that the highest achieving students attend schools with good library media centers. It's easy to see why. School library media centers across the country have been helping teachers bring lessons to life. With computers, videos, books, and more for years. The Campaign for America's Libraries reminds you that school library media specialists help students develop the information searching skills they need to succeed throughout their lives.
All systems ready.
Cool. Lifelong learning begins at your library.
Past the hour. Got you guys on the phone. Let's do this first, though. This came in from Ramon earlier, who was wearing a George Bush mask. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
My computer's doing something weird. But it doesn't matter because I can read it off a piece of paper.
What?
I've had computer problems all day. Do you ever get that feeling sometimes they follow you around? Like, I have problems with my home computer, and this computer here's got nothing to do with me, but they're ganging up on me.
I had 2 days. My computer didn't work downstairs, but we have a really good computer guy. See, I'm going to suck up to him now, so next time anything goes wrong, he fixes it ipso facto.
He's been nothing but nice. Here we go. Presidential Palm Pilot. 6:30 a.m. Wake up. Stay on message. John Kerry is soft on Cat Stevens and other 70s folk rock singers. 8:10 a.m. Speak at ceremony marking the opening of the National Museum of the American Indian. Note, insist on being called Great White Father and use the phrase, I'm the Peace Pipe President. 11:20 a.m. Meet with Prime Minister O'Leary of Iraq. Tell him he's doing a magnificent job controlling one-eighth of his country. 12:05 p.m. Have photos taken with O'Leary. Lighten the mood by posing with our heads stuck through a wooden cutout of a cop and a gorilla. 4:15 p.m. Fly to Maine. Speak at rally in Bangor. Praise their state for only needing one syllable. Not like that wasteful Massachusetts. Massachusetts. Oh, my God, I can't even say it. 7 p.m., back to Washington. Call National Weather Service. See if you can get them to name the next hurricane after Gene, Hurricane Kerry. Promise them some new satellites or something. 8 p.m., call Porter Goss. Congratulate him on becoming the new director of the CIA. Tell him to submit enemies list by Friday. 10 p.m., bedtime. Note, delete Morning is Broken as wake-up CD. What did Smarty Pants Larson just hand us here? Okay, you're coming through to Phoenix loud and clear. Keep up the fight against the Bush crime family. Well, good. There you go. It's an, what'd you say, John?
Yeah.
If this is an email, yeah, someone just sent us an email. But is he streaming or is he listening on the radio station? You know, that's what I'm trying to figure out, because we were trying to figure out, are we running in real time at 3 in the morning to 6 in the morning? Or,
I think
Greg, will you write back and confirm that it's on the radio? I think Greg's actually on the... Is he on the blog as well? You know what? I don't know. All right, let's talk to
Either
somebody.
Either way, Mornings Edition is in Phoenix.
Woo! That's absolutely right. My computer's doing this weird thing. I think it's because I dumped iced coffee on it.
Well, that might do it.
Do you think that might screw up a whole laptop?
You want me to do it? I'll do it.
Tim in Maine. No, I can see everybody.
Hello?
Hi, Tim.
Hey, Tim.
Hey, how you guys doing?
All right, how you feel?
Good. Listen, first of all, they're going to plan to yank you guys off the air up here as of October.
What is that about? Did you talk to anybody? Because we don't get any information here.
Yeah, it's just, it was in the paper yesterday, and I wouldn't be surprised if somebody's leaning on them to take it off, because they're going to replace it with another, you know, yet one more sports station.
Really?
Yeah.
We've replaced some sports stations in other markets.
Oh, yeah, well, not up here.
Mm.
But yeah, I read about this. This is apparently a new company bought the station.
Yeah, it's called Nassau.
Yeah, they're based in Jersey, ironically enough.
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah. And they think that going with a sports station Because there's a lot of local high school sports that goes on there.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, it is like sports obsessed up here.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, it's like, you know, it's September 11th, I expected them to cut into the covers to, you know, give the Little League scores or something. I mean, that's how obsessed they are with it.
Oh, my God.
So I guess we Maren, what we need to do is devote a segment to, like, Kobe Bryant or something.
I don't know. I don't talk about any sports. I'm not a big sports guy. So, Tim, where do you live in Maine?
Just outside of Portland.
It's beautiful up there, isn't it?
It really is, actually. It's better when the bushes are not here, but, you know. there's just the trash that comes up here in the summertime, so we don't really care.
Have you ever been to Machias, Maine?
Oh, yeah.
I went up there once. I drove all the way from Boston to Machias, Maine, which is the furthest point east in the United States, I believe.
Uh-huh.
And it's way up there. You know where it is, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah, Eastport is actually the furthest east, but Machias is just right near there.
And
yeah.
It's like, it's so beautiful up there. I actually drove like 7 or 8 hours all the way through that windy road, all the way up into Maine to open for a hypnotist at a college.
But you didn't do it twice, though, did you?
Back in the day, man. All right, so what's on your mind there, Tim?
Well, first of all, you know, it's like I am, like, outraged that, well, I mean, I spent my life outraged lately, Tim,
yeah.
But can you believe there is not even a press conference after two Americans were beheaded?
Yeah, he doesn't seem to like he doesn't like, he doesn't go to military funerals. He doesn't seem to address any singular incident of death in any way. He's completely.
Well, it's not surprising that he won't do it, but what really is surprising is that America is not screaming, "Where are you?"
Oh, yeah. Well, John Kerry is certainly saying that he lives in a fictional world, thank God, but that's a good question. But it's pretty easily answered. The guy's got his head up his. You know.
But, you know, the reality is, Mark.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. What is his response to this? He can't even say, we're going to go and get this guy.
He's incapable of a response. He's incapable of any real sort of empathy or even sympathy. He's a pathological narcissist that it's just emotionally handicapped.
Well, we got good news.
Yes.
And it's not saving on car insurance. He is listening on 1010 AM in Phoenix, Arizona. So we're in real time.
Okay, so that means that, you know, we're not going to be on from 6 to 9 in Phoenix, which means that my brother won't be able to listen to it, but I'm glad Greg is listening to it.
I think it's probably like 4 to 7. So I'm assuming if they're 2 hours behind us, it's like about 6:25 Mountain Time.
All right, well, I'll just tell my brother to start his harried life at 4 in the morning so he can hear me. I'm not disappointed. Welcome aboard, Phoenix. I'm happy you're there. Vincent, New Jersey, how are you?
Hey, Vincent.
Guys, I'm thinking about Bush at the United Nations trying to marshal moral support from the whole world against the Iraqis, and the absence, the total absence of any semblance of morality in his administration. What a contradiction. And what about morality in politics? Isn't it possible?
I, you know, I'll be honest with you. Before I took this job, I was sort of generalizing. I was a generalizing person, a broad stroke person, and, you know, I thought idealistically that, you know, perhaps there was some room for it. But the more I get involved with hanging out with Mark Riley and learning about how politics really works, it's such a game to a lot of these guys.
It is a game, and politics, morality in politics is possible. But hardly likely.
Well, right. And the thing that you get in John Kerry is somebody who he seems like he deliberates over things. He thinks about things. He takes people into consideration. He believes in when I see his record in Congress and how he approaches problems, that he at least, you know, has empathy and his heart's in the right place. And I think that you can hope for that, that perhaps a politician is capable of actually representing the people and having their heart in the right place. But morality, that's difficult.
Well, you know, I think the caller brings up a very interesting point, and that is, what is the possible contrast between George W. Bush going to the United Nations and asking on a moral basis for people to coalesce around his program for Iraq versus a John Kerry going to that same body and perhaps saying, look, you know, this war was a mistake, but we now have to, we cannot just cut and run, we cannot abandon it, and we want to sit with you and develop a consensus about how we're going to deal with the situation. Bush has never said that to the rest of the world.
Right, he's a belligerent, smug, arrogant, spoiled, fake Christian, AWOL blow monkey puppet of the Cheney regime's Republican death cult.
That's what he is. And he got up in front of the United Nations and in a passive way begged them for help after he went against everything they represent to go into this war. The guy is a pathological narcissist. He's a disturbed person who is incapable of empathy and understanding for anybody.
And I don't think there's going to be much support for whatever he said at the United Nations.
You know? That's for sure.
Haven't heard any yet. Coming up, the Presidential Daily Briefing, comic book artist Art Spiegelman, the liberal agenda, and more here on Air America Radio.
Are Americans better off than we were 4 years ago? In a new national poll conducted by Mother Jones Magazine, a strong majority of registered voters from across the country claim that the United States has gotten pretty seriously off on the wrong track. And half of those surveyed voted for George W. Bush in the 2000 presidential election. Take the poll yourself and view the complete results at MotherJones.com. Also at MotherJones.com, your daily mojo. Every day, the editors of Mother Jones scour the web for the day's most important stories and post them for you online. Mother Jones, strange name for a magazine, but take a look. See what you think.
Crimes Against Nature, a new book by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., sets the record straight on George W. Bush, corporate greed, and the plunder of America. Crimes Against Nature makes the case that the administration has taken corporate cronyism to unprecedented heights, threatening our health, our national security, and our democracy. Al Franken calls Crimes Against Nature a passionate and devastatingly written attack on the Bush administration. Crimes Against Nature, the national bestseller by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., a HarperCollins book. Now available at bookstores and online at AirAmericaRadio.com.
Air America Radio News, I'm Mike Piazza. John Kerry says George Bush lives in a world of make-believe. He's referring to an alleged blunder Bush made by saying there's just a handful of terrorists in Iraq. Kerry is taking a day off from the campaign trail to recuperate from a bad cold. President Bush and Iraqi interim Prime Minister Iyad Alawi are set to meet today to discuss the situation in Iraq. It's the second time in 3 days they have met. Bush has praised Alawi in recent days. A militant group is claiming to have beheaded two Italian females taken hostage in Iraq. The group says it killed them without pity or mercy. The Italian government is urging maximum caution in assessing the claims. Meantime, no new word on British hostage Kenneth Bigley's threatened with death. A senior Iraqi oil official has been gunned down. The man was killed as he headed to work in the northeastern city of Mosul. The attack comes less than 2 weeks after the man's boss escaped an assassination attempt. Air America Radio News, I'm Mike Piazza.
Sirius NFL Radio, Channel 124, is all football all the time. Hear breaking NFL news and scores 24 hours a day, along with exclusive interviews.
Let's talk football. Let's talk football.
Commentary and analysis from top players and coaches. Our all-star staff includes Shannon Sharp, Chris Carter, Dan Reeves, Sean Riggins, and Keyshawn Johnson. When it's the NFL you want, it's the NFL you can't get. NFL Radio, 124.
This is Earth and Sky. Sarah Sines in Sunrise, Florida, wants to know about dieting and our bodies.
She writes, for every pound we're overweight, our bodies grow 200 miles of new capillaries. What happens to those capillaries when we lose weight?
Sarah, it's true, your body grows 200 miles, more than 300 kilometers, of new capillaries for each added pound of weight. Capillaries are tiny blood vessels. They're so tiny that they only allow one blood cell to move freely through them at a time. Capillaries pass nutrients to our cells and pick up wastes. When a person gains a few pounds of fat tissue, that tissue needs a supply of blood to survive, and that's why you grow the new network of tiny blood vessels.
Typically, as you lose weight, the existing fatty cells just shrink and wait for a chance to grow again. That's why it can be so hard to shed weight. But through persistent dieting and exercise, the fat tissue can be reabsorbed into the body. To answer your question, Sarah, the cells of the capillaries can also be broken down.
So the vast network of tiny capillaries can slowly recede along with your receding waistline. We have links to more about this process at our website, earthsky.org. Thanks for your question, Sarah, and with thanks to the National Science Foundation, I'm Joel Block.
And I'm Deborah Bird for Earth and Sky.
past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yep.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Got a guest coming up I'm very excited about, but right now it's time to look at the Presidential Daily Briefing, that highly classified top secret document that crosses George W. Bush's desk every morning. Today's PDB from the intelligence community is entitled CBS Cabal Plans Debate Sneak Attack. Mr. President, it has come to our attention that Bob Schiffer, chief Washington correspondent for CBS News, has been chosen to be the moderator of the upcoming presidential debate. Given 60 Minutes' embarrassment over their recent use of forged documents to impugn your valiant and punctual National Guard service, nothing could be more ominous than the selection of this vengeful 85-year-old liberal attack dog to preside over an important debate. As moderator, Schiffer would have to have the power to direct questions toward you personally with the expectation of some kind of response. Personally, this is obviously unacceptable, as you've made it abundantly clear that answering questions is not the job of the President of the United States. It is our recommendation that Schiffer be replaced by someone less journalistic, like Ryan Sequest, Carson Daly, or even Leslie Stahl. Mr. President, CBS cannot be trusted, even though for many years it was the home of many of your favorite shows, such as Touched by an Angel and Matlock. Switch over to Fox immediately. Respectfully, Office of Homeland Security. How do you introduce our guest? He is a man of phenomenal comic talent. You would say artistic talent. A tremendous range. He's a Pulitzer Prize winner for the second installment of the Mouse series, which is a genius. Would you call it a graphic novel?
People call it a graphic novel, so I'm just, like, letting that one slide. I call them comics.
That's Art Spiegelman. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Hey, good to be with you, Mark and Mark.
It's a pleasure to have you. You know, I've been reading your stuff for years. I remember when I started buying the Raw series. When did that start, when you were doing Raw, which is a compilation?
1980, at a moment when a lot of the steam had gone out of the underground comics that were emanating from San Francisco, like Zap. Part of that scene a bit. But by 1980, it was sort of reduced to people who could sort of draw a little bit like Robert Crumb and do stuff that was highly sexualized or about dope.
Right.
So, as a matter
of... what's wrong with that?
Nothing wrong with it. It's just like people are too stoned to read them by 1980. And the only thing and at some point, a lot of really great work was coming out of Europe, out of young people who drew in a different way, artists, painters who'd become interested in comics. So my wife, Françoise, and I just started to make a magazine in the hopes that people could just see what a magazine ought to be with comics. You know?
Right.
And that somehow kept... We would always swear we were just doing one issue and then never again because it was just too much work and whatever. But after each issue was out, there was sort of like a clamor, either from the artists or from the audience. We kept growing bigger in spite of ourselves.
I remember they were great.
Way.
And there was a couple of them that were like huge. There was like one issue of Raw that was almost the size of a table, I remember. And then at some point it became smaller, and then another big one would come out. How many did you do?
We did 8 big ones, 3 small ones, and then a collection of some of the big ones as a book with Pantheon a while back. When we went to the small ones, it's so we could have more pages and do longer stories. I think it was part of what made that phrase graphic novels come into existence, because Mouse was being published in chapters, but I couldn't really do more than 30 pages at a time, obviously. So instead of doing those big, expensive pages, we did little, cheaper pages, but more of them.
Yeah, it was just a phenomenal thing, because I remember when I was younger, I used to read the Zap comics, and the first time I ever saw sex was actually in an R. Crumb comic. You know, so it really blew my mind. They had that much of an impact on me. And I remember that the thing that amazes me about your work is that you seem to be a master of several different styles. You seem to have a very historical mind when it comes to the history of comics.
Actually, what I really am is just more, what's more than schizophrenic? Multiphrenic?
Yeah.
So I got like, what it is I've never been able to figure out one way to draw. I feel pretty unsure of my drawing ability, actually. And so some of me that are inside me sort of know how to draw. Some of the folks in there can't even figure out which way is up with a pencil. And like any given day, I can't tell which one's going to get into the catbird seat and move it along. So I, finally, with the No Towers book, I found a way to put them all together into one spot where like all the different selves get to scream at once.
Yeah, I noticed that. Now, you draw from like historically. I have that at home now. Is there Crazy Cat in there? Am I recalling
correctly? Crazy Cat was the one comic strip that gave me cultural sustenance and comfort after September 11th.
That's interesting.
Because I don't know if... Were you here then?
Yes.
Yeah.
All day I was here.
Okay. And every time you were with more than five people, somebody would start reading W.H. Auden's September 1st, 1939. It's a poem that has the punchline, "We must love one another or die."
Uh-huh.
And it was great, but I kept missing the rest of the poem. I'd wake up with the "We must love one another or die," but I couldn't concentrate at that moment. So after I was getting news poisoning from the web and from CNN on September 12th, 13th,
14th. Wait a minute, 13, news
14,
poisoning? Yeah. I like that concept. News poisoning.
You know, you just OD and you had to go somewhere. And I couldn't go to music. I couldn't listen to music after September 11th. I couldn't concentrate in a certain way. And comics, because they plug into both sides of your head, they you get two channels, you know,
sure,
like a picture and word channel.
Yeah.
And somehow that, I was able to take in, and then I started looking at my old Crazy Cat strips and that I had, like, in reprint books and some old pieces of newsprint that I'd saved, and those were giving me real comfort, and basically, they were saying the same thing. You've got to learn to love one another or die, even though, you know, ultimately, Auden perfected what he said in the last line. He said, "You've got to love one another and die," which is a lot more accurate, you know?
Right. Wait a minute, hold on. Forgive my ignorance about this. You did the original Crazy Cat?
No, that was by, actually, a black cartoonist from the first part of the last century, named George Harriman. It was the one comic strip that even the people that looked down on comics as being very lowbrow said, you know, this thing smells of art to us. And you know what it was? It was like there's a love triangle between a cat, a mouse, and a dog. The mouse would throw bricks at the cat. The dog was office a pup, and he would... the only crime in Coconino County was throwing bricks at cats.
And the mouse was Ignatz?
Mouse was Ignatz. Cats was Crazy Cat. Officer Puff would catch Ignatz and put him into a jail made of bricks. And that was an open-ended enough thing. So some people like E. Cummings would talk about the superego, the ego, and the id as each character.
Yeah.
Other ones would talk about fascism, democracy, and anarchy. And like it was about all that and so much less. You know,
it was about
cats getting hit with bricks. But it left it so you could kind of look into it. And after September 11th, in my adult state, I was looking at this mouse throwing the bricks, and I was going, damn, that's Osama bin Laden, you know?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And like, ultimately, there was this one page, which is actually one of the pages in the second part of this book.
In the Shadow of No Towers?
Yeah, in the Shadow of No Towers, in which, basically, the other people in Coconino County are singing. They gather together. They're yowling next to Crazy Cat. And then a forlorn note comes into the panel from off stage, and they scratch their heads, and then they have to go to the jail and sing with Ignatz so that everybody could harmonize together. And so, like, although he's a lot sweeter than Osama bin Laden was, the message, at least, was every snake... Every Eden has its snake, and somehow you've got to figure out a way to accommodate the snake because it's always going to be there.
Right. Well, hold that thought. Let's talk more about the new book and the Shadow of the Towers. We're talking to Art Spiegelman, and we'll be back in a moment on Air America Radio.
Sirius NFL Radio, Channel 124, is all football all the time. Hear breaking NFL news and scores 24 hours a day, along with exclusive interviews.
Let's talk football. Let's talk football.
Commentary and analysis from top players and coaches. All-star staff includes Shannon Sharp, Chris Carter, Cam Reeves, John Riggins, and Keyshawn Johnson. When it's the NFL you want, it's the NFL you can't get. NFL Radio 124.
Speak out on Sirius.
Get serious about your vote.
Hi, this is Joanne from Poughkeepsie, New York. I'm voting for John Kerry. And whoever you're going to vote for, that's okay. We can still be friends, but please vote in the upcoming November election.
I'm Larry from New York City, and I am going with George W. Bush in 04. Thanks very much.
This is Rich. Tell the two candidates that are running for president, will you stop beating each other up? Just start talking about some jobs. Will you? Half the people I know are unemployed. The economy stinks. Get the word out that we need some jobs. Fix the economy, would you? Tell them.
Hi, this is Pat from Oklahoma. On election day, I'm going to go out and I'm going to cast my vote for George Bush. And if you don't like it, then you better get off your butt, get down to the polls, and cast your vote for the other guy.
Tell us why this presidential election is important to you.
Call 1-877-33-SIRIUS and press 4.
To speak out on Sirius. And we're back. Bob from Scranton, you're on the air.
Hi, Ted. Love the show. Long-time listener. First-time caller.
Thanks, Bob. Is there a special someone out there you'd like to talk about?
There is, Ted. I recently lost a very big part of my life.
You'd been together a long time?
Since college. This is for my belly, my paunch, my spare tire. I know we had some good times. God knows I'll never forget that night in Albuquerque with the burrito.
It's never easy to lose something that's been such a huge part of you, Bob. Where'd the magic go?
Well, I'd recently begun taking the stairs more and more instead of the elevator, and then we started seeing less and less of each other. One day, it was just gone.
Small step number 67. Take the stairs instead of the elevator or escalator. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to help you become a healthier, well, you. Get started at www.smallstep.gov and take a small step to get healthy.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Conservation International applies innovations in science, economics, policy, and community participation to protect the Earth's richest natural regions. Their objective is to conserve plant and animal diversity in major tropical wilderness areas and key marine ecosystems. With headquarters in Washington, D.C., CI works in more than 30 countries on four continents. For more information about CI's programs, please visit www.conservation.org.
Back, it's 44 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. With me is Mark Riley and the comic book artist, Pulitzer Prize winning genius person, Art Spiegelman. I'm a huge fan.
Depends who you read. Like, Newsweek called me a genius for this book, and Time called me a moron. So it's like, I report, you decide.
Yeah, I love the book. I brought it home with me. It's called In the Shadow of No Towers. It's got a lot of comic narrative about your sort of reaction to the World Trade Center tragedy and how you found your way back into creativity, back into life, back into being able to feel again. It's very interesting. Tell us a little bit about that process.
Huh. Well, you know, it's a really weird book. It's really a few large plates.
Yes.
That were the result of, after the morning of September 11th, where I was down in Ground Zero finding my daughter had just started life at Stuyvesant.
Because you live down there.
Yeah, we live a few blocks away. The first block that wasn't cordoned off past Canal Street.
Mm-hmm.
So we went running down in there while other people were running out to get our daughter.
Yeah.
And got her out of the school just in time to have the tower fall right behind us. And that... you know, nothing like a little smell of death to shake things up. So
yeah.
I was going, you know, you should have done more comics, Schmuck. It was a lot easier to either draw or write than to draw and write together. And I was like a farmer being paid to not grow wheat. I was just drawing covers for the New Yorker or writing essays for the most part. And after that, I figured, okay, the way I do comics, I'm slow. You got to live forever to do these things. But if you don't start now, you're never going to get any done. And so after I got over September 11th enough to get back to figuring out what I wanted to do, which was about half a year later. The
shocking. I mean, people, I was in shock for at least 3 or 4 months.
Exactly.
Yeah,
September 11th till at least March of 2000,
yeah,
as far as I figure.
Yeah. Unbelievable. You couldn't put a thought together.
Exactly. I couldn't put a thought together. So I was making little notes, you know?
Yeah.
And then we were talking about, like, these different drawing styles and these different selves, you know?
Yeah.
I couldn't put thoughts together, but I'd have them. They just come out as sort of like unasked for bombs coming at me from different sides. And then I figured I really needed to kind of put it together for myself. And when I started doing it, by the time I started doing it, what I wanted to do is just relive my September 11th in comics format and figure out what I had seen directly as opposed to what I was getting from the media representation.
Right.
So I planned out how I was going to do that a bit before I started doing these very large size broadsheet pages. But basically, by the time I was really getting rolling, my government had hijacked the hijacking. The events of September 11th had been, before anybody could take the measure of what it meant for 110-story-high buildings to get bombed out of the sky and who did it and why, at that moment, instead, I was stuck with the fact that it had just been reduced to a war recruiting poster.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And so the strip began to change, and even though I didn't want to be a political cartoonist, nothing ages faster than, angry picture of a president, you know, afterwards.
Yes.
It's only available in, like, footnote margins of history books, and I was interested in a comics for the future, for posterity of some kind, like you take 13 years and you do it, but you have to really think the world's going to last. And at that moment, I thought, the heck with that, I'm waiting for some other shoe to drop,
yeah.
you know, and at that point, you don't work for posterity, you work for the moment, and So it was almost like going back to the earliest comics, which were all just part of like one news cycle. They were just there for the day, and then they were used to Raff Fish, and even the artist wasn't thinking about it being read by
right.
E. Cummings or Umberto Eco and having them comment on it. Like,
see what the Pulitzer did to your head, Art?
No, that was Harriman. That was George Harriman.
But I mean, just the idea that, you know, people may not understand that you almost single-handedly lifted comics into a form that is something that is going to be, you know, looked at for generations to come in a way that, like, but when someone gets a Pulitzer Prize for a novel or a piece of art, I mean, that has a certain amount of integrity and weight to it.
Yeah, it was a shock to me, but I got to say, it was a special Pulitzer.
Like
Special Olympics.
Oh,
you know?
Oh,
separate category.
Or else you can look at it like they invented a Pulitzer for you.
Yeah, right.
Why do you mean to derail your riff there?
Well,
what you're saying is you were going back to the simple, to the, nature.
Wait, first, what you said about this inventing the comics or as serious form and whatever. In a way, as the world turns to absolute sludge, comics are doing just fine. They're in libraries. The same librarians that used to burn them a generation ago are begging kids to come look at it because it looks like reading to them. Mm-hmm. And
but he's dealing with serious matters. Like, you know, when I read Mouse, I was like, you know, this is really, it's a deep story. It's a story that, you know, you take on elements of family, and certainly you deal with the Holocaust, you deal with the Nazis, and you're dealing with, you know, cats and mice.
Yes.
And you know, it's deep stuff.
All I was trying to do is make a comic book that needed a bookmark, you know, a really fat one. But essentially, as far, you know, I wish I had spent those 30 years fighting for social justice and world peace rather than the legitimacy of the comics, seeing how well comics are doing right now and how everything else is really kind of not doing so hot.
So this politicized.
This kind of re-politicized. You know, it's not like, you know, I was so depressed after the 2000 election that I just like had to shut off all the news and start listening to 1950s science fiction show versions of the future from like internet replays of old radio, so I could just listen to somebody talking to me and not have to hear about what was going on around me.
Oh, wow.
I had a similar thing. I couldn't watch Bush.
So you went back in the comic form, and you also actually went back to old radio.
I was just scurrying for cover in some other time period.
You were time traveling. We're going to talk more with Art Spiegelman. Yeah, hold that thought if you can. In just a second, it's 50 past the hour, Air America Radio. Hey, you guys, remember, there are two kinds of Americans, voters and morons. Register to vote through our link at morningsedition.com. Please, please, will you? Thanks.
Are you losing your hair? Dr. Gary Gordon, Chief Medical Director at the world-renowned Gordon Research Institute, describes exciting new research guaranteed to solve your hair problem.
New data released by the FDA indicates that the body chemical dehydrotestosterone, commonly known as DHT, is the leading cause of hair loss. At our institute, we studied numerous hair loss treatments and found that Folinex is the most effective solution for stimulating new hair growth in balding areas. If you want to stop DHT from causing any further hair loss, then I strongly recommend that you try Folinex now. Folinex's DHT blocker has been used successfully for over 8 years by tens of thousands of men and women. Folinex is powerful enough to regrow hair on virtually anyone, we guarantee it.
Folinex is available for a limited time at half the price of other competitors. Folinex is guaranteed to work for you. So order risk-free now by calling 800-256-8214. That's 800-256-8214. Call 800-256-8214.
Hey, Jimmy, what's up?
Hey, man, turn on 24th and Skelsey's.
Oh, yeah, I completely forgot. I gotta call Sally. Hello?
Hey, Sally, Vince Skels is on Sirius Disorder 24.
Oh, I know. I got it on. He just played some Tom Waits, then into a Louis tune. It was great. Oh, listen, I got to call Jim.
Hey, Sally, yeah, I know why you're calling. I've got Vin on right now.
Did you catch that interview with Suzanne Vega?
Vin Skels' Idiot's Delight. Freeform radio at its finest. Turn a friend on. Sunday nights at 8 Eastern on Sirius Disorder 24.
Growing up on a farm out here, I just thought life was great. I had my own horse. I drove a tractor with my dad. For me, I thought farm life was the American dream. Hi, my name is Rex Phipps. That all changed when I was reminded how dangerous working on a farm can be. My cousin was almost killed in a terrible accident. I had to do something. I couldn't help my cousin, but I could help other people avoid this on their farms. So I volunteered at farm safety day camps for children of all ages, teaching kids about being safe around tractors, tools, and animals. Just like I found a need to fill in my community, your community needs you. Find out how you can help in your hometown. Get out and live. Volunteer.
Brought to you by the Hitachi Foundation's Yoshiyama Award for Exemplary Service to the Community and this station.
Shows tropical storms just south of Louisiana coast.
At the Red Cross, just a few hours of your time helps make countless services possible. Whether you'd like to help out on the front lines or behind the scenes, there's something everyone can do to help prepare people in your community. Join the Red Cross and become part of something bigger than us all. To get involved, contact your local American Red Cross or visit www.redcross.org.
Okay, we're coming in for landing here. It's 53 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. We're talking to Art Spiegelman, the comic book artist. And you said on the break that you're not really a morning person, but you were jamming.
Yeah,
I can't even imagine in 3 hours at the pace you'd be going.
Well, I'm in hyperdrive at the moment. Okay. I'm going to stay with the program.
The most powerful thing, we were about to talk about the book. We got a couple minutes.
Basically, I was doing these as if they were compressed journal entries once a month. And they were mostly running in a Coalition of the Willing, all my own, which was European newspapers.
Uh-huh.
America wasn't that interested, except for the weekly forward, a small remnant of a socialist Yiddish weekly daily. For the most part, it was being published in Europe, and if I hadn't been doing them that way, I would never remember how asleep the American press was and how frightened and afraid to say anything it was between 2002 and 2003 when I was making those pages. And after September 2003, the press began looking toward an election season and remembered, oh, yeah, we're a democracy. We're supposed to have the vigorous debate. So all of a sudden, instead of like saying, oh, yeah, weapons of mass destruction, that sounds good. Saddam, yeah, let's fight him, whatever, and then all of a sudden, the pages that were refused by a lot of mainstream newspapers and magazines began to look interesting to them again, and some of it got published here. And so I figured, great, if the watchdogs are awake, I can go back to sleep and just read my old comic books.
Yeah.
Which was about where I was until, say, we were about to find out, like, where did Abu Ghraib come from?
Right.
2 seconds before the punchline, we're involved in some kind of Ronald Reagan-like Princess Di festival.
All of a sudden,
wham, Abu Ghraib falls off the front pages. So these things had to be done mainly in Europe, where I was seen as sort of like a skinnier and more off-message Michael Moore, you know?
Well, that's great. They got out there. Let me ask you a question about the book. The book is called In the Shadow of No Towers, and it's a big book. It's a beautiful book. Now, my question when I read it, what was the choice around using were they real vintage comics in the back?
Oh, absolutely.
In the second half?
The way I figured, it's like these two towers, my stuff and then the stuff that like allowed my stuff to happen, which was done from the beginning of the 20th century. And what it was the reason I was taking, to wrap it all back to what you started asking me, is like those old comics were made for one news cycle, you know? And the fact that they weren't made like with the pretension of lasting forever, that the fact that they were ephemeral is part of what made them so strong for me, because it evoked a real life from the early 20th century where the world was ending in its own way. Like the title page is the day after McKinley is shot, and they say, President's wound reopened, slight change for worse, which could have been a headline on yesterday's paper as far as I'm concerned. But at a time where monuments, towers or like systems of government seem to be very fragile, and so monuments become ephemeral. For me, ephemera became monumental.
Oh, it's interesting.
Wow.
So that's heavy, and now it makes sense to me. Because I read the whole book and I loved the book, but I wouldn't have been able to find where that decision making happened to include the older comics.
It's a very few places, but it's a complex work in a way. I got to tell you, like, because these 10 pages were made as ephemera, so I figured bringing that forward as a theme is what let it be a book rather than like 10 pages that I would let sit in a file folder somewhere.
Well, it's a beautiful book, and I really appreciate you coming down here and talking to us. It's a pleasure.
Thank
you.
It's a pleasure.
Really, it was a pleasure
was
meeting you. That was Art Spiegelman, and I learned a lot.
The book is called In the Shadow of No Towers, and we're going to have him back.
Yeah, definitely.
Would you? That'd be great.
Yeah, definitely. All right, there's our liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. Here are your marching orders, so write these down. 1, produce dance remix of Bush's speech to the UN, adding screams, gunshots, and fart noises. 2, change outgoing answering machine message to, hi, I'm not in right now, 1,100 Americans have died in Iraq and Afghanistan. 3, criticize other Muslim folk rockers for not rallying around Cat Stevens. 4, encourage possible North Korea ballistic missile test as a big step towards just figuring themselves out. And 5, today's phrase, just drop it into conversation, quote, why don't they arrest Ted Nugent, huh? I mean, he calls himself the Motor City Madman, end quote. What do we got going tomorrow, Mark Riley?
Well, we got a few things going on tomorrow. On tomorrow's Morning's Edition, comedian Barry Weintraub. And, talking about the massive tobacco trial underway, the ultimate tobacco industry insider, Jeffrey Wigand. Do you remember him?
Yeah, I do. I saw the movie anyway.
Yeah. Extraordinary situation there. That's tomorrow's Morning's Edition here on Air America Radio. Have a good one, Maren.
All right, you too, Riley. Take it easy.